How's it going?
Pretty good, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, very well.
I do it well,
I
very
do it
well.
well, very well.
I quoted that, but I realized that that's from a local commercial that you would have never heard.
Oh.
There's this local restaurant, and at the end of the commercial, they ask the owner, "How do you do it?" And he says, "I do it well.
Oh,
I
very
do it
well.
very well."
It's kind of like the Men's Warehouse when they used to have that one guy. I can't remember what. Oh, you'll like the way you look. That's what he would always say at the end of it.
Oh,
But
yeah.
Modern Family kind of poked fun at that in the last episode.
Did they?
Yeah, they were kind of creative. They had two creative episodes. One of them was pretty smart. It was like when Claire was at the airport and she was on her computer, like IMing and Facebooking and instant chatting, or what did they call it when FaceTime, with all of her family. And they just integrated the whole episode like that, and it was really good. But
Interesting.
they had the guy sells closets, so they had a lot of slogans about closets. Like one of them was like, "Laughs a box at closets." They were like poking fun of it. It was pretty funny.
The silly dad character that sells
Yeah,
closets?
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like Terminator, I'll be closet.
Sounds like it was just stuff that didn't even make sense.
It didn't make sense, yeah,
Yeah.
but it was fun. But his original slogan was in the vein of like what you were talking about, but nobody understood it, I think we have a nice day today, so Harley's going to be in and out, in and out, in and out.
Our weather took a turn for the worse. It was starting to get warmer, but yesterday and today, we've got a little bit of snow again, actually. And then it's supposed to
Yeah.
warm up tomorrow, so it's not going to stay on the ground very long. Even later today, it's supposed to turn to rain. But yeah, I'm ready for summer for sure. But you got a little early taste of summer the last few weeks, didn't you?
Yeah. I was in Florida, so it's always summer there, right?
In the land of old people and Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
And that seemed like it was a sort of a family vacation.
Yeah.
And you hit a lot of the spots.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of
That's cool.
fun. It was tiresome, but it was fun. I'd always come home exhausted.
Tiresome just because you were fitting a lot of stuff in the days.
Yeah,
Yeah.
a lot of lines.
Yeah, and you don't realize it, but you go to an amusement park, you end up doing a lot of walking.
Oh yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, it
Miles
can
and
be.
miles and miles of walking from open to close.
Yeah, and you're in the sun a lot for most of it. But
Yeah.
it's a good time. What was your favorite thing of all?
I liked Universal the best, like by far, and we spent a lot of money on that pass because they have this. They have like Disney, like if you get a 7 day pass, every day is cheaper. Do you know what I mean? But we were only going there one day, and it was before my whole family got there, and we got like that fast pass, which was expensive, but it was so well worth it because their fast pass is so different than Disney's. Disney's every day you can pick three rides and try to get a fast pass for it. And then once you use all your fast passes up, you can get in line to try to get another fast pass. So,
Interesting.
but if you just pay Universal, which is a lot of money, I'm talking about $100 more, you get unlimited fast passes, and it's kind of like walking on the rides for the most part, with the exception of the Harry Potter rides because they're new. There's like three Harry Potter rides, and you can't use the fast pass on two of them. But their emulators and their rides, I think, are more for ages like 14 and up. You know, they're more extreme. They're more, if you like thrill rides and emulators and stuff like that, they're just better. And they had some really cool shit. Well, they always had the Spider-Man. You know, they have the Marvel Land, which is always really good, and the Spider emulator. But they had other emulators this time that were just as good. They had the Simpsons emulator, which was hilarious because it doesn't cut any slack. Simpsons is Simpsons, and it's raw, and its humor is in the adult range. You know, like for kids, but it's kind of a kid's ride, but the emulation is pretty awesome. It's very much like the Spider-Man ride, and then they have the Transformers, and then the Harry Potters, and Despicable Me, and it's incredible. And then the roller coasters are amazing. They have the rock and roll, I can't remember what they call it. I went on two rock and roll roller coasters, and I thought one of them was kind of weak. The Aerosmith one was like a weak Space Mountain to me. The one that I really liked was at Universal, where you actually get to pick your music. Like you're in a seat of two, and you have this emulator that's around your ears where you can only hear your music, which is pretty awesome. And you get to pick like rock or whatever. You know, I was like doing Linkin Park or something like that. But it scared the hell out of me because it like shoots you up 90 degrees really slow. Like you just go up, you're almost upside down. And my cell phone was coming out, and I never rode this roller coaster, so I didn't know what to expect. And they have cameras in the back of the seats, so you get to see your whole ride while you're riding it, not just a picture. And I was terrified because I thought I was gonna lose my cell phone, and I didn't know they were dropping us and stuff. And it's pretty hilarious, man. I would have loved to have bought that, but it was just too expensive. They wanted like $40 for a DVD,
Wow, that's a
and I was
lot.
like, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, because I don't think it was even that much. When we were on our honeymoon, we did the canopy, what do you call it? The wire zip lines,
Yeah.
the canopy zip line. And after we were done with that, we went ahead and bought the DVD
Yeah.
of it because we figured how many times are we going to have this opportunity, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't even think it was that much.
Yeah, this was $40. That was a lot. And I really should have, though, because it was raw emotion, man. I like my hands were bound almost, and I was trying to save my cell phone. It
Yeah.
was sliding out of my pocket.
That's
But
scary.
it was a good time. And then Epcot and the Animal Kingdom, I never saw a lot of those rides, and those were really good. And it was a good time. What do they call that thing where they have the jousting? The medieval times, you know. We did that one night
Oh
where
yeah.
you watch jousters and you eat with your hands and
Yeah, I went to one of those. Oh, it's gotta have been almost 10 years ago now, near Washington, D.C.
yeah.
It's the only time I've been to one. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, it was a
The
good
whole
time.
experience. But yeah, you guys got some good pictures of yourselves on rides, even though you didn't get the DVD.
Yeah.
And your mom was cracking me up in them,
She's always going sideways in terror.
hiding her face, and
Yeah.
it's pretty funny.
She was a real sport. She rode everything except for Space Mountain because she hates that ride. Because Space
Yeah.
Mountain's like a fast roller coaster just in the dark.
In the dark,
That's
yeah.
kind of like what the Aerosmith one is. It's like you got a lot of fluorescent lights and they play Aerosmith and you go on this and it shoots you out, but I don't know, it just didn't seem to it was so fast and it wasn't even as long as Space Mountain. It seems like you were there and it was over.
Yeah, I think you have to. I think if it's too fast, then you don't really experience the effect of being in the dark and the anticipation
Yeah.
of when am I going to drop. I think part of the whole thing with Space Mountain is the anticipation, not knowing what's coming.
Yeah.
But my memory of that is really, I haven't been to Disney World since I was a kid.
Yeah.
But I did go on Space Mountain. I only vaguely remember it, though.
They had Expedition to Everest, which is a new ride at the Animal Kingdom. That one is good. It starts off slow and you're kind of like, man, this roller coaster is weird. But the whole surprise of it is we didn't know what to expect. We didn't read up on it or anything.
Yeah.
And you like go up to this area where they have these Yetis and you run into this Yeti. And Barb was like, I really like to ride on the back instead of the front because you have all the weight of the cars pushing you forward and stuff. But we were in the front row this time, and I was like, that's cool. You don't get to see people's heads or anything. You just get to experience a ride with nobody, no expectations. And the cool thing about this one is it shot you backwards. You run into this Yeti, which it looks like the railing is busted, and then it just like sh it shoots you like a slingshot backwards on a drop. And you can't even see where you're going, so it's really cool when you can't see where you're going because you don't know what to expect.
Yeah, there's the amusement park that's near us has a roller coaster. You go through it once forward and then once backwards.
Yeah.
But did you go through the part of Epcot where all the they have all the different countries?
Yeah. We ate like pigs. We ate a lot. We
That's the
went with family one day, and we spent very little time there other than we had reservations in Japan, you know, to eat there. And
That sounds very very elite.
yeah.
We had reservations in Japan for dinner, so we hopped onto our private jet and flew in
That's
for the
right.
evening, and then we were back for cocktails.
So we just did that there, and we did a couple of things. But one day, me and Barb went to the animal thing, and then at night we went to, or towards the end of the day, we went to eat it, and we ate like at every country almost, mostly desserts. But it was fun. It was a good time.
culinary tour of the world.
Yeah, I didn't read a lot of comics.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of probably how, like, when I was on my honeymoon, I'd get out something to read before bed, and I would just end up falling asleep.
Yeah, I was too
Just,
tired.
yeah.
I would read like I got caught up in Batgirl, and I'm glad I read it because I was infuriated with that thing. I don't know. I know me and you see it a little different, but I hate when people like take stuff away from other fans when, to me, even though the writer says it's not in the vein, I can point several maybe 25 instances in his own comic where he references it. He literally has panels about it. So it would fit right in. And there's a couple of people that get real animate on the other side. You know, like there was one writer that was on my page and he was like, I think he knows what he's doing, and he knows, but I also, as a fan, I should be able to interpret a book the way I interpret it, you know, the way I read it. And the whole damn thing that just pisses me off is it's not even the main cover. It's a variant, and it's Joker's month. But anyway, I read the Gail Simone. I finished the Gail Simone run, which I thought was really good. Especially the villain she introduced. She introduced like a lot of crazy characters. One of them I liked a lot, and I thought the name was ingenious because it referenced a Batman event. It was Nightfall. She was like a awesome character because she was just like filthy rich, and she had her own idea of justice, and she had all these mercenaries or people that were working for her, and sometimes Batgirl would find herself that she had to work with her in order to, you know, the ends justify the means kind of thing. But that series ended really good, and I actually thought I thought the transition was going to be jarring, and it was jarring the first issue, but the way Gail ended the issue, she like ended it like, I'm going to move out, I'm going to go do this. So it wasn't that jarring. Do you know what I mean? It just had a weird transition, but once you got like two, three issues in, it didn't feel that jarring.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, 'cause the way that Gail ended her run, it set you up to expect a change.
Yeah, she
So
kind of
that
like said, I'm done with this. I'm done with this violence, you know. She kind of set it up for the next writer. Her editors saying, you know, we're going to drive this character in a different direction. But she did a good job of making it a transition because she ended the Nightfall storyline, and kind of it kind of rolled into the next one, which was a really good arc. I really like the new Batgirl. It was very entertaining. The only thing I don't dig too much is the villains, because they're just so yuppie. They're just so weird. They don't, in some instances, I don't know. It's like you had these two villains that were like anime knockoffs, and you had the one guy that was stealing stuff, you know, from people's phones and stuff like that. And it was just like really weird. But it was well executed. It was done really well.
Yeah, it's a really well-made comic. I do feel like it is maybe aiming at a market that's younger than me a little bit, which doesn't mean.
I don't think so, though. I mean,
I
I
mean,
think it, I think the villains definitely were, but in the other thing that just set me off, that I didn't like of the new, okay, I liked everything. I liked the writing. The art was phenomenal in the new run. The new costume design I think was like spot on.
Yeah, I like the
The
costume a lot.
things I didn't care for, but they worked. In other words, I didn't personally care for it, but they worked to me. They executed them well, were the villains, because they were weird. And then the one thing that set me off was it was like the first or second issue where she got totally drunk. She didn't remember anything. And we're talking about a girl that has a photographic memory. Like, you know, she's always had remembered things. That's made her a good detective in the past. And she got so fucked up. And this is the part that was jarring for me. Okay, you're changing your all ages comic, or you're trying to make it more accessible for a different audience. But
Which, yeah, I don't think that's an all ages audience, though.
Well,
That's a
it's
goal.
not an all agents. I don't know what they're going for, to tell you the truth,
I think they're
because
going for like late teens, early 20s.
yeah, but still, what that tells me is that they're telling me that, you know, we have a hero that's willing to get intoxicated to the point she doesn't remember anything, and she's with some guy she doesn't even fucking know. Like she doesn't even know this person, and the only thing that saves her is her roommate, really, because her roommate was like, you know, you got to lay off each other and just get some sleep and blah blah blah. But I think that's so dangerous. And every time I go to Heroes Con, especially, you go to Heroes Con and there's like this little, it's like 4 blocks away from the convention center, maybe 5 blocks. But there's like this downtown party zone where they have all these bars, all these places, all these things. And the thing that shocks me all the time, and it just blows my mind, is you'll go on these elevators, and I make fun of Bill all the time because he's like the elevator guy. But you go on these elevators around 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, because you're out with your friends, and you see these drunk women, and I'm not talking like drunk, I'm talking like so fucked up they don't even know their names. And you see like four dudes holding her up, like, oh yeah, we're gonna have a good time with this one and shit like that. And I'm like, God damn, that to me, that's like, to me, that's like rape. Whether you get yourself in that situation or not, you're still not aware of what you're doing. If you're dumb enough to get yourself, that's one of the things, right? For one thing, Barbara Gordon's not dumb. And she did get drunk, and they played that up, and that bothered me because I've never, ever, ever seen her irresponsible. I could see her getting drunk. I could see her drinking, but not to the point where she doesn't remember anything, like nothing. And they really played that up.
Well, it didn't bother me in the way that it bothered you. Maybe because I've been there. I mean, like, I know that you don't have a history with alcohol or that you've never been a drinker or anything like that, but a lot of people do go through that phase in college where maybe they drink a little bit too much. And one of the things about drinking is, unfortunately, your judgment's impaired. So if you have a few too many, sometimes you don't know when to stop exactly. And a lot of people go through that phase where it's there can be a difference between somebody who makes a mistake, drinks too much, and doesn't really remember what happened, and the type of situation that you're describing that you see at Heroes Con. I mean, I definitely agree with you in terms of women especially need to be careful, especially when they're drinking in public like that,
Yeah. Men
and
too, though, 'cause they could do something
oh, sure, yeah.
they don't even know they really did.
Sure.
In this case, the guy in Batgirl, I think, was just as drunk as her.
Right.
And that's why they cut, when they kind of broke him up, it was like, but the one thing too is that she could have gotten pregnant. They could have had sex. Batgirl could have had a kid that wasn't Grayson. You know, you always dream that if Batgirl has a kid, it'll be Dick's kid. But yeah, I don't know. You're right. Your reading experience is based on what your experiences are. But and I have gotten drunk. But every time that I have gotten drunk, it's been I know what's I know what's going on. Like I never passed out, but I've had impaired, but I never drove. I was usually in Vegas. I could get, it seems like everything's like a little less, like you could drink your ass off in Vegas and not being as bad because I think they pump so much oxygen into the fucking casinos and stuff that you're not as bad as you would be as if you were you know, doing it at just a regular bar. Either that or they make their alcohol really mild, but I don't know. I Vegas would work in both ways. In other words, if the more drunker you get, the more you could spend and not be aware of what you spent. You just gambled away, you know? Especially in today's world where you could just stick your credit card or whatever into the freaking thing and go to town. But I hear what you're saying, but I also hear that it's I just don't think that is, if this was not Batgirl, if this was like a new character, like a brand spanking new character, I probably would buy that. If it was a character like from the movement, you know, like Gail Simone's movement where they introduced all those new characters, I probably wouldn't have thought twice about it. But
Yeah, for
this
me it
was.
was just she's it sort of fit with the phase that they're trying to put her at in her life right now, where she's in a new environment. She's I don't think it was presented as something you should go out and do yourself. I thought it was presented as something like as a mistake that a lot of people make, and so a lot of people could identify with, and that's kind of why I mean, I can.
I didn't see that because I didn't see any regret about it in the morning. In other words, other than I vomited in a trash can, I didn't see like her, oh God, I can't believe I did this.
Well, I guess I didn't mean regret in an extreme sense, in a like a real melodramatic way. Just I should, probably shouldn't have done that. And yeah, something could have gone wrong, but
It
thankfully it
didn't.
didn't. And you know, hopefully I won't repeat that mistake again. But a lot of people do go on and repeat that mistake a few times. And for me, I mean, those memories are pretty distant now, over a decade ago. But a lot of people that are in their early 20s, even people that don't go on to be that much of a drinker or something, you know, as if they're experimenting with it or trying things out. Yeah, you have the extreme cases and where people are really irresponsible and get themselves into some really bad situations. But then you just have.
I know this is retro, but I want to ask you a question based on what
Sure.
you just said. Okay, so you've had some instances where you drank and you kind of didn't remember. What was your saving grace that didn't get you into hot water or kept you from driving and wrecking the car or doing something that you were like, holy crap, I just did this. You know what I mean? Because somebody could do something to you when you're that plastered.
Sure.
You, I mean,
Environment.
it's one variable to do the joke thing, like, oh, he's so fucked up, I'm gonna teabag him or something like that. He can wake up and my balls will be in his face or something like that. But then
Yeah.
to get into a situation where you accidentally did something, you hurt another individual, like. Was it your environment or your friends? Like, was there always somebody
Yeah.
that guided you home or made sure that you didn't do something extreme?
Yeah, environment and friends, both of those things. I'm not saying that I was always the most careful, but I think the reason that nothing like that ever happened was because I had really, really good friends. I had a group of guys that I was friends with who were like my brother, like my brothers. It just so happened that we were a group of guys that none of us, we all had sisters, so we were like brothers to each other, and we always looked out for each other. And then also a big part of it is environment. You know, I never chose to, I was always careful
Be in the
about where I
wrong
was.
situation,
Yeah,
right?
I wouldn't, if I was at a party where I didn't know people and I was by myself, or if I was out, even if I was out in public, would not have a tendency. Like you said, you do see these people out at Heroes Con and in elevators and stuff like that. Generally, I was at my own place, or I was somewhere where I was going to be crashing there that night. You know, I wasn't going to have to try to figure out how to get a ride home or anything like that. So, yeah, I mean, I was smart about choices I made before I started drinking, you know.
So you kind of knew the situation you were going into before you.
Yeah, almost always. Yeah. So, I mean, if this was a, if I kept reading Batgirl and it was just happening issue over issue, I would start to have a pause about that. But to me, the way I read it, at least in that issue, was
She needed to go out and drink.
this was something that was going on, and she seemed to have been with friends, and like you said, that guy that she was with, sort of in the same situation, like maybe he seemed like a decent dude that also maybe maybe they wouldn't have gone as far as they did with each other physically if they hadn't been drinking. But I think they were just showing Barbara's not perfect, and she's at a certain point in her life where she's trying some things, and I think they want people of that age to have something to identify with. And when that's why that's not the only example, but why earlier I was saying that their target market maybe not necessarily my age or older. That doesn't mean I can't read it and enjoy it, just like I would read something maybe that's aimed towards kids or something that's a story about old people. Just that they're trying to maybe draw in a, they've already got us, and they want to maybe try to draw in a younger crowd and attract people to comics that are of that age and younger generations that are coming up, so.
Yeah, that was an interesting discussion on the Retrocast.
Yeah.
But that was pretty much my vacation. I had a good time. It was a long one, and now I'm back to reality, so it's always rough going back.
Yeah, I guess it was retro in the sense that we were talking about.
Drinking in the past.
Yeah. Life that is behind us now that our bodies can't handle anymore.
Yeah, the time I got drunk was in Vegas. Well, I've done it at friends' houses too, and like thrown up in their porches and shit like that. But I always knew what I was doing. I just got like deathly ill. I
Yeah.
have a really bad reaction to shots. R really, like it's almost like guaranteed disaster.
Yeah, and that's part of it too, like knowing your limits, you know,
Yeah,
which is
it's like
different for everybody.
it's like guaranteed sickness. Whether it be like piercing headache or throw up. But when I went to Vegas, we did this college trip with IEEE, like just the group. It wasn't a function. But yeah, we went to Vegas and we did two, like it was like a 35-hour trip. It was like a weird trip to like to do in 2 days, and we knew we were gonna stay up all night, and we kind of bought one room for 30 people, and that was only there in the event that somebody wanted to get rest or whatever. But the idea was you're gonna spend 24 hours up, and yeah, I drank everywhere I went, but I don't know what it was. Even though I was drinking, I didn't feel. As a matter of fact, I was well aware of what was going on because we went to a strip club, and I remember every distinctive thing that happened there. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life because, and this will lead to one of our listener questions, but
Okay, that's interesting.
yeah, but
I'll see how you do this.
there was I think this club was called like the Palomino Club, and it had different levels. Like the first one had the main walkway and the pole dancers there, and then the second level was a higher tier, and the third level, and you kind of like drink your way up the levels. And we got to the third level, and it was like totally nude. There was like no G string or nothing. It was like totally nude dancing. And what I remember distinctively is this one girl, and I'll never forget it, but she was dancing in front of me and my buddies. And the one thing that she would do is you'd have your dollar bill while she was on the stage or whatever. And a lot of the time she'd take that dollar bill, you either put it in a bikini or she didn't have a bikini, so she'd pretty much grab it, and she'd grab it with her boobs. But she had this thing where she would put the dollar bill on the rim of your glasses and push her boobs together and grab it. It would smother the hell out of your glasses if you had glasses. And she did it for me, and she did it for a couple other guys because we're all geeks. We all had glasses. We had bad eyesight. But I remember my one buddy who was there. This was hilarious. is she got her boobs to get her glasses, and she snapped the middle part of his glasses in two with her breasts. She broke his glasses, so he was like in a disarray. I can't fucking see. He was like, "We gotta leave. We gotta leave." And she felt really bad. So she's like totally naked. I mean, she doesn't have anything on, but she feels bad because she just broke a geek's glasses and he can't see. Like he can't even wear them because they're snapped in two. So she went back, didn't get dressed or anything, but went and got some super glue. And she said, "I'll super glue these glasses together." And what ended up happening is turning into a super glue disaster, like a naked stripper with like her fingers sticking together, and like she stuck to his glasses. And
Oh my gosh.
you're like watching this, and it was just hilarious. But
Holy cow.
and it the reason it leads to a listener question is I'll go find it. It wasn't one that was that I just posted, but
If there's ever a
somebody, go ahead.
I was gonna say if there's a while you're looking for if there's ever a DC Noise TV show, you're gonna have to recreate that scenario.
Yeah, it was hilarious, and it was funny because one of the professors, I got back and I told him, and he just went up. He couldn't stop laughing. Me and him were just like busting a gut, like you wouldn't believe. I don't think I laughed that hard in my life, because it hurt so bad. Like I was on the floor laughing, and every time
Oh
I
yeah.
talk about it, I laugh. It was pretty hilarious.
Oh, I
So
can't even imagine seeing that in person.
yeah. But this was an older question that I think we missed the last two episodes and just didn't see it.
Was it Brian?
I think it was either. No, it's Joel Eustace.
Okay. 'Cause I feel like there's I have to do some digging. I feel like we missed some questions from Brian at one point. I can't remember what they were.
Yeah, this one, these are the ones that are the post to the page that we can't see unless we look at the column that says post to page, because it's like an individual post, and it doesn't show up on the feed line because we're a page. But he says, since Geek Brunch Retro is enjoying Buck so much, what is your favorite Def Leppard song or album?
Oh yeah.
And have you ever seen them in concert? I have seen them twice. And he said, congrats on 50. And I think this one did come after our last episode. In other words, we posted that we're looking for questions and it came like after we recorded.
Yeah,
So
I think you're right.
it's not too late. But I am gonna say I love Def Leppard. Like when I hit Pyromania, I like loved it so much that I went backwards and then I went forward all the way through, like, and just got all their cassette tapes. And then it was cassette tapes at that time that I was into.
Yeah.
And but the one song from them that'll always stay out is the song that was playing what the girl was stripping to. And you think it was a fast song, but she was actually stripping to a slow song. And it was, "Have you ever wanted someone so bad? Have you ever wanted someone you just couldn't have?" And I think it was on their Animal, or it was on the Pour Some Sugar on Me album or whatever it was.
Yeah, Hysteria.
Hysteria, it was on there. Hysteria is a fantastic album. But I'll always remember that because she broke his glasses and she was totally naked. And I'll remember it bit for bit for bit during that whole song. And every time I hear it, I'll remember that song.
That's an interesting connection. Yeah, the reason I knew the name of the album right there was because that's my answer. That's my only choice, really, because that's the only Def Leppard album I was really into, and I was definitely really into that particular album. I think that is their biggest album, but that came out in 1987, so I was
It
eight.
could be their biggest album, but Pyromania's got to be really close, 'cause it's got like
Yeah,
Rock of
that's
Ages and
right before it.
Photograph and all that, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, Hysteria was the one that I had on cassette and that I knew really well because at that time I was really into that type of glam metal and stuff.
You know what's cool about things back then is you buy the cassette your brain was trained to listen to the whole cassette, and you knew every song that played after the previous song. You can memorize them. And it was weird when you hear it on the radio and the next song didn't come on. Because
Right,
you
you
like
would.
just beat that CD to death, and listen to it over and over again.
Yeah, I would always start to hear the next song in my head or start to sing it, even though it wouldn't. When it was on the radio, you would start to hear the next song that's on the album. I'm trying to think of which one of those songs is the one that you were talking about. Is it Woman, maybe?
I
But
remember the lyrics. Have you ever wanted someone so bad? Have you ever wanted someone you just couldn't have? God, I know that song.
yeah,
But
I'm looking it up for you.
I don't know the title of the song.
Oh, I think it is just "Have you ever needed someone so bad?"
Oh, okay.
That's
That's it.
what it looks. It looks like that's the case. Yeah.
So that song will. I think we answered that question. And have we ever seen him in concert? I have not.
No, me neither.
I tried a couple times. We've had bad luck, me and Barb, with concerts because there's a couple bands we've always wanted to see, and Def Leppard, I don't think we ever had the opportunity to see, but like we wanted to always see Counting Crows because we love Counting Crows, and the guy got sick, and then me and Barb are huge Depeche Mode fans. I mean, like huge, going back to high school, and we had an opportunity to see them, and they were in Colorado. They were like the first year that I got a job, and it was so big that I even called my brother and I said, Depeche Mode's gonna be here. My brother's like, can me and Mark come up there and stay with you? And we were in an apartment at the time, and I said, sure. And Gahan got sick. I'm like, son of a bitch. So I missed those two bands, and
Was
then I
that the
think
time period he was having drug problems, or
no, he got he really
that was
did get
after he
sick.
was clean?
He really got sick. It could have been during his drug problems because he's always had problems. He's kind of like the Sid Vicious,
Yeah.
you know.
Well, I know it came to a point where his problems were at a head, and then he ended up getting clean. That's kind of the reason that the band's still around now.
There you go. I hear it. So all you
Yeah.
just picture is a buck naked, beautiful girl dancing, putting dollars on the rims of glasses, and breaking one of
I thought I'd help it come back to your mind even more.
them.
It says this is actually from the album after Hysteria,
Okay.
Adrenalize.
Oh, adrenalized. Okay, so.
Yeah.
What year did it say?
1992 it came out.
Okay, that
March
sounds
31st.
that's right. That's the year before I graduated, so yep. That was some memories.
Speaking of sexy women dancing to Def Leppard, I was always as a young man, the video for, I think it was for Pour Some Sugar on Me, wasn't it, that had the woman dancing around.
Yeah, that's the perfect stripper song, by the way.
That one, and then I think it was was it Great White that had the song where the woman was dancing on the car?
Oh yeah, that was not Great White. It was son of a bitch.
Yeah, I think it was.
It had what's her name dancing on the car. She was in the movie Bachelor Party too. I forget what her name was. Wasn't Great White, was it?
It might not
White
be. I gotta
White
look.
Snake.
Oh, White Snake,
White
yes.
Snake.
You're right,
I knew it 'cause I know exactly the video you're talking about.
yeah.
That was hot.
I got my whites mixed up.
Yeah. That girl was in actually Tom Hanks's Bachelor Party too. That's what
Okay.
I remember her for. The Bachelor Party, I love that movie when I saw it because it was freaking hilarious. It's like they're setting up this whole crazy ass bachelor party, and the girl that he's going to marry decide to dress as hookers and go crash the party. But it's a crazy movie. This is really retro. It's taken me back many, many
Yeah,
years.
no, but you did a good job. I had no idea how you were going to transition into retro, but We are definitely retro now, once again.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird transition.
That's okay, as long as it works.
And then we have some other questions. Do you just want to finish the questions?
Yeah, might as well.
All right. So we had a, I don't think we addressed this question. This was for episode 50 again, and I know it came later. Is the top five retro TV series or top five 80 geek movies? This is from Shane from Australia. And is there one comic book or comic book character you can't live without?
Well, for comic book character that I can't live without, I mean, I guess I'm having to a little bit if you talk about current comics, but as far as my own reading, and it would be Wally West Flash, because then I would have to also quit doing the podcast that I'm doing. So it would have more than just an effect on my reading. But so that's definitely my first thought. I think for Marvel, I think it probably would be Spider-Man.
I think for me, if it's single characters, well, people would know me for OMAC, but OMAC doesn't, I don't want to say OMAC because he doesn't have that much out there. Do you know what I mean? There's
Yeah,
not a
you're
lot, there's not a lot of OMAC content. What one's that?
This is White Snake.
Oh yeah.
I don't think this is the one I was thinking of, but I think all their videos had like sexy women dancing around, because this video has a woman dancing around her apartment in a
Yeah.
slip.
But I think we're thinking of the one where she's on a car, right?
Yeah, that must be their other real big song.
Yeah.
But
For me, I hate to say, but it'd probably be the same character. It would probably be the Flash. Because he's what got me into, hardcore collecting and stuff. And then on the Marvel side, it'd be Daredevil.
That's probably my number two for Marvel.
Yeah. I love a lot of characters, though. It's hard to just pick and
Oh, yeah.
choose.
Yeah,
Like
depending upon the input.
right now though, if I was like in a, if I could pick one character that I wanted to read the most, it would be Batman, just because there's so many good Batman stories. There's I could and there's so much of it that it would hard I'd be hard pressed not to choose that if I could only pick one.
Yeah. That's
So
a tough call.
The 70s TV shows, God, I don't remember a lot. I like 70s or 80s. I did you watch TV in the 70s? Weren't you just being born?
Yeah, I was born in 79, so didn't watch too much
That
TV, at least as it was airing.
I think that video that you're playing now is "Here It Goes Again" or whatever. That's
Yeah,
the
this is the one.
that's the car one.
Yeah, she's already on
Yeah,
the car. I was just waiting for it to kick in because it's real slow in the beginning, and she's
then
just kind of like doing a split,
it picks up. Yeah.
and the chorus of this song picks up.
You know what I remember White Snake from? Is I was in college and I'd go to the pool hall, like in the student building, and White Snake was always playing.
Oh, yeah.
And me and my fellow engineer would go there and play during lunch. We'd play pool.
Nice.
So what year was that? Does it say?
1987.
Yeah, that was my first year. Yeah, so
So
yeah.
really right at the same time as Hysteria, but yeah. I mean, I was 8 years old, so I was sitting there watching this video, and this grown woman is doing a split across the hoods of two cars.
You're like, damn, that's a sexy.
My mind was just blown. I don't think I might not even have known what sexy was, but I was finding out.
Yeah, so that question from Joel had about an hour's worth of discussion. But TV shows in the 70s, I think Three's Company started in the 70s. I think like the Jeffersons started in the 70s. I think Starsky and Hutch was in the 70s, and I used to watch that.
Yeah, was it just your favorites was the
Yeah,
question?
that and All in the Family. I watched a lot of sitcoms is what I did. But as far as like shows that like I think was more like Buck Rogers started in the 70s, wasn't it? 79?
Yeah.
So
Right around there. It's more of a 70s style TV show than an 80s one, really.
the 70s I watched a lot of sitcoms, very little action drama type shows. I mean, with the exception of like Star Trek and like some of the sci-fi. I watched the Spider-Man show, the Hulk, but Hulk had to be the 80s. And I don't know when Spider-Man came out, like the Nicholas Hammond Spider-Man. I used to watch that, but I was a geek. I watched, ooh, Charlie's Angels might have started in the 70s. I always watched that because they were sexy as hell.
I definitely was the sick doing the sitcoms in the 80s.
So we kind of had the same thing. We're just a decade off.
Yeah, I watched Growing Pains, Elf. Elf was a big phenomenon. Who's the Boss, of course,
Yeah.
which caused my intense crush on Alyssa Milano when I was a kid. Full House was later 80s. I didn't watch it all the way to the end because it ran into the 90s, but the earlier years of that show, that was towards the end of my sitcom watching days. A little bit of Fraggle Rock. Trying to think what else.
As I get older, the years just blur.
Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah.
A-Team, Golden Girls.
Definitely watched all of those. I didn't watch a lot of Who's the Boss, though. Like, I watched a lot of it. Like, my brother is younger than me, and I know he had the Alyssa Milano thing going on.
Yeah. Roseanne. Watched Roseanne at least for the first few years.
I caught
Pretty.
on to Roseanne late, and then I liked it, and then I watched a lot of it in syndication.
Family
Oh, isn't
Ties,
there Cheers too? Cheers and
Cheers,
the Cosby Show, even though he's
Cosby Show.
controversial right now.
Yeah,
The
that
Cosby Show.
breaks my heart, man.
Night Court.
Family Ties, Wonder Years. Loved Wonder Years.
I missed a lot of Wonder Years. Like I caught on the last season. Can you believe that? I think Barb
Wow.
watched it all the time, and I just started watching it towards the end.
But yeah, Cheers and Cosby Show. I know I talked about Cosby Show a lot on the show before,
Yeah.
but Cosby Show was a big one. I mean, Cheers I saw later seasons because it was on later, and when I was real young, it was on too late, and the humor was a little adult.
Yeah.
But later on, started seeing it. Even Golden Girls could be super raunchy at times.
Yeah.
Just part of the humor, I think, was these old women being
It's
nasty.
probably Betty Wright White driving that.
Yeah, some of it went over my head, I think. Well, there was the character Blanche, and her thing
Yeah.
was Rue Callahan. Like her thing of her character was that she was always with different men, and
Yeah, she was the real rich one. She was well to do. She had money.
Yeah, but.
Then there was the real old one who was the main character, who I don't remember her name, but I remember she was Maude in that other TV show, but she had the older mother that was funny.
Yeah, and the whole thing that people always talk about is that the mother character was actually the youngest actress on the show.
Yeah, that's weird though. They made
Yeah.
her up to be the oldest.
Right. She had makeup and wig and stuff like that, but she was actually the youngest of all the actresses.
Yeah.
Which is funny, but yeah, that I've seen plenty. My sister loves the Golden Girls. Estelle Getty is the name of the actress that played the oldest actress, but yeah, they're hilarious. And Betty White, she played the real, she was the real dunce. She was real dumb, and they always made fun of her, and she'd never get the jokes, and she'd always talk about her hometown of St. Olaf. And she'd tell these really weird stories about her hometown and the weird things that went on there. Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant. But doom, boom, boom. And if you threw a party, invited everyone you knew, you would see the greatest gift would be from me. And the card attached would say, thank you for
For
being
being
a
a friend. Wow, you know
friend.
all the lyrics.
Bow, 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 bow. There you go, Alan. That should keep you satisfied for a few weeks. A whole song. Yeah, I don't know why, but I have that whole song and it comes up in my head. I haven't seen an episode of Golden Girls for years now, and that song is still stuck in my head. I don't know why.
And we have a couple questions from Twitter. let me see if I can find the first one. From Greg C, Notorious G3. Any comic runs that you are afraid to reread out of fear that they won't hold up your memories of them?
That's an interesting question. I don't know. I've revisited a lot of stuff. I've been pretty lucky in revisiting some of the earliest comics I read. Are actually pretty good quality and hold up. Some of this, there are stuff that I liked when I was a kid, but I'm not really afraid to revisit them. I've kind of already done so and found out that they don't really hold up for me. And it doesn't bother me too much. I just figure my tastes have changed. That doesn't really bother me. So I don't think I have anything like that.
My answer is I can't think of anything because when I read back issues, my mind shifts to the era that it was. In other words, I am different. I don't read a 90s book and then compare it to a book today or a book in the 80s or whatever. I read it for the, it's like my mind can shift to that time frame. And I know that time frame. If it's in the 80s, it's in the 80s. And I've said I've enjoyed every time frame except the golden age, but I am real. You've probably seen from some of my posts, I'm really getting into the golden age lately.
That's
So
cool.
I am able to break that barrier now that I always had trouble with, and finally read. They are dense as hell, but I am enjoying the hell out of them right now. So, and it's more from I'm seeing them like my mind shifts to more of an historical time period. I'm like, holy crap, this is the 40s, man. This is the 40s, World War II. I mean, shit is going on. There's all these things going on, and people are reading these comics. And I go back and with that mode, and one of the books I'm gonna be reviewing today is Golden Age. So,
Oh, that's cool.
yeah.
Yeah, I like to learn about creators that were active in the Golden Age because so many of those creators served in World War II.
Yeah, and we just lost one. God, I can't think of his name, but I have a commission from him. Do you remember the guy that we just Alan? Was his name Alan? I can't think of his last name. He did a lot of Alan Scott, Green Lantern, and Wildcat. He was the creator of Wildcat, I believe. But that guy was like the nicest man, and I'd go to Heroes Con every year, and see him, and he usually didn't have a lot of people in front of him, but man, was it a pleasure talking to him. And like he loved what he did. He did Dot Doty. It was a comic strip that was real popular one time. Was it
Oh,
Dondi Do Doty?
you're talking about Erwin Hansen.
Yeah, Erwin Hansen just
Type.
passed away.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. He's one of the co-creator of Wildcat with Bill Finger.
Wildcat. Yeah. So he was an amazing guy, and I'm so glad that I got to talk to him. And a lot of times at cons, I'll spend time like talking to Golden Age creators, and I find out I like them. They're such great men or women, but the woman I'm talking about is more Silver Age, but it is they're fascinating people, and it's a fascinating time. And if your mind can shift into the Golden Age, I'd highly recommend it because it's there's just so much history there. And they use sophisticated words compared to the Silver Age. Do you know what I mean? They were targeting a younger kid, and if you compare some of the verbiage or words that they use with the Silver Age book, there are higher words that they use, like not common, but maybe it was a word that was used a lot in the 40s, though. You know, it's hard to tell,
Yeah, it could
because
be a little of both.
we'll never know that, unless we watch a movie and the director's so good or the writer's so good that he knows what words were popular at the time.
Yeah. Or
It's one of
watch a
those
movie
things.
from that time.
Yeah, or watch a movie from that time. That's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a good question. That one's a tough one for me to answer though, because my mind does shift. So I don't like look at them and say, "Oh, this is different." I like look at a 90s. Like I recently read some old Shadow Man from the 90s where it was Zero. It wasn't even the Shadow Man that we know, Jack Boniface. It was Zero, who was the mercenary guy, and I was really enjoying him. So, you know, like my mind can shift into the 90s and look at 90s art and be perfectly happy. So Kyle, who recently wrote a nice a Twitter to both of us saying that he was going back and listening to old episodes of Retrocast, also had a couple questions. What are some full runs that are especially meaningful to you? The story, emotion, art, collectability, etc. Well,
Like
you're.
from a story perspective, or ones that you actually own and you're happy to own them, would you say, or?
I would say from books that you own that are, because he uses the word collectability and that
Yeah.
have some emotional ties to, like yours would be like Wally West Flash, like that volume two, right? A Flash.
Yeah, because I started collecting it when it was already into Geoff Johns's run. So, maybe like 170s or 180s. So I had a lot of collecting to do. And it took a while, but so when I finally got the last issue to complete that, it felt like a an accomplishment. So there was definitely some collecting going on into that. And then others that were finished before I ever started reading DC. So I wasn't buying them as they came out. So I'm starting from scratch, collecting. So after probably the Wally West Flash, it would probably be New Teen Titans, first volume, because I didn't read New Teen Titans growing up. And I don't have a lot of expensive comics, but I did buy, not, and they're not outrageous or anything like that, but I did buy DC Comics Presents 26 and then New Teen Titans number one and number two.
Yeah.
Number two's the first Deathstroke and stuff. So I like having that because that involves Wally West, but it also involves a lot of other characters I like and creators that I like. Wolfman and Perez. So I have that going all the way through the second volume to a certain point into a decent way into when it had turned to New Titans. So yeah, that would be a good one. Maybe All-Star Squadron would be another one.
Yeah.
But
Justice Society of America.
yeah, I mean, I have the JSA run and stuff. That one I started actually reading about halfway through. So it didn't feel as much of like I had to go back and collect some of the earlier ones, but a lot of them I was buying as they came out. So.
For me, it's pretty much the whole Valiant run. I'm really happy to have that. I'm really happy to own all of the Ultraverse because that means a lot to me, and I'm happy with my DC collection. I mean the whole entire thing.
Yeah.
I really like having all of the Jack the Fourth World stuff. That's really important to me. Like that I have every single issue of that. I have it in multiple forms, some of them. But that means a lot to me, and that I was attracted to very late in life in my college years. Like Kirby became something that I really identified with and when I was in school.
Yeah.
Oh, man, there's so many good things. I like the Michelinie runs of Iron Man and Unknown Soldier and Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man with like Tard MacFarlane and even the Eric Larson years. Those are good stuff. Justice League, always a big fan of the Satellite Era. The one that makes me cry every time, guaranteed, though, is Identity Crisis. I'll bawl at that one. There's so much freaking emotion in that book tied up. Still my favorite event book of all time. I love like Mike Grell's stuff. Huge fan. There's so much. I can't even. I just love all of it. So, but the companies that DC is probably by far what I that's my wheelhouse. Even though I like love some Marvel runs and stuff like that, DC is where I feel at home. And it doesn't matter what era. It's just. That's my wheelhouse, and I feel that way with Valiant too, but in a different way. Like, if I had to choose, it would definitely be DC because that's what I enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy a lot of Marvel stuff, but I've chosen not to collect it.
But you're if you had to go back, you would probably be more of a Marvel person, and you're just finding like you. You're relating more now to DC, right?
You mean go back in terms of what?
Like when you first started, you were like an X-Men guy, right? And Avengers.
X-Men's Spider-Man
Yeah.
were the big two. Oh yeah, I didn't read any DC as a kid. I didn't read a DC until I was in my early 20s. I had maybe two Batman comics that I just
Wow.
happened to end up with somehow. I didn't touch DC. It didn't interest me at all. I remember this kid down the street trying to convince me that it was a big deal that Batman's back had gotten broken.
Yeah.
And I just told him whatever.
And see, I like remember all that stuff because I, a matter of fact, I want to reread Nightfall. I really do at some point. There's like four volumes of trades and I have the original issues, but that would take some effort because I know that part of my collection are in the long boxes that are stacked. In other words, they're not drawer boxes, they're stacked long boxes, which are hard to get to. I almost killed myself getting to my Valiant collection.
Yeah, you might get a hernia or something.
My Valiant Connect collection was long boxes. And one thing I realized is that during a certain time, long boxes were longer. by about 4 inches, which made him a lot heavier and a lot wonkier to move. But I had him stacked on the six high, and my Valiant stuff was always on the top, and it was like 4 or 5 rows deep, and I could get to all the ones in the front, but I couldn't get to the back, and I almost killed myself because I had to use like some brooms and stuff to like try to wiggle the box out from the far, the deepest area on a step ladder. And almost killed myself. But a matter of fact, there was an episode of 6 Feet Under. It was an HBO show about two brothers and a mom that inherited the family's mortician,
Yeah,
business,
I saw every one of
F
those.
fun funeral home. I really liked that show, but there was one episode where a guy was crushed by his comics.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot about that. Because
I
they would
told I.
always have the intros where somebody would die.
Yeah, I totally thought of that when I was getting my Valiant comics. I was like, I'm gonna kill myself.
Totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So that was a good question. And then Kyle also said, "Are you guys going to any cons this year? If so, are you looking for any comics in specific?" Well, I know you're trying to go to Heroes for the first time, right?
I think
Or
I'm,
Baltimore.
yeah, actually, I think I'm leaning heavily towards Baltimore now.
Yeah.
I didn't want to wait as long, but it's from here, the flight to Baltimore is super cheap, and it'll be or super convenient, and it'll also be less than half the price of
Right.
going to Charlotte. For some reason, there's no,
Direct flights.
it's just really inconvenient to fly to Charlotte from here. I don't know why, but Baltimore is just real easy, real convenient. I've done it before. I've been to Baltimore several times. I know the city pretty good, so I'm kind of leaning towards that at this point.
Yeah. For sure I'm going to the Denver Comic Con. I have my tickets for that one already. Heroes Con. We have our I think do we are we booked for that, Barb? Yeah, we're booked for Heroes Con. So Heroes Con's a done deal. Baltimore is the other one we're pretty much gonna go to. And then I might go to Ace, which is in Albuquerque. It really depends on when it falls. That one's an awkward one. Well, the one thing I like about Denver and Heroes and Baltimore is they're separated by enough time that you don't feel uncomfortable asking for that time off from work or whatever. They're separated enough. Whereas some of the other cons, they're stacked, and I can't really go to them. I haven't found a good one to go to in the fall. It seems like the one in Baltimore is kind of like in the fall, like at the beginning of it. But after that one, I don't really attend any cons, so I have like a long con area where I don't go to. But then he said, "Are you going to look for any comics in specific?" And my answer is probably not. I mostly go to meet my buddies, and it's changed a lot. But one thing I am going to look for, and I'll guarantee this, is I found out I am really enjoying the Golden Age archives, and I really want to get all of them at some point of the Justice Society of America characters. They'll have like a Golden
That'd be
Age
nice.
Sandman, a Golden Age Hawkman, a Golden Age Flash. They have those archives, and I really like to have those on my shelf. I'm working on the All-Star Comics one right now, and I'm finding out I'm really enjoying them, even though they're formulaic and stuff. I really do like the heroes, and I really do like the stories, and I kind of want to know all about them. The one that surprises me is Johnny Thunder. I am really enjoying that character from multiple perspectives, and I never thought I would. And I've always liked the Spectre. I've always liked him. And I'm finding out I'm liking the. I never read a lot of Golden Age Dr. Fate, but he is really interesting. The other guy that's interesting to me is Hourman. I really dig him. I don't think there's an archive for him. And then there's Golden Age Starman archives. But a lot of these conventions will have those archives for like 15 or 20 bucks. And
Yeah.
that's why, and I can't lug a lot of them back home. So I might buy three or four and then bring them back. But I won't buy like all of them, which is what I would do if they were on sale for 15, 20 bucks here. In my state, I would just go procure them all right now. I'll tell you right now, I just drive my truck up and say, "Look, get them all." But because I have to haul it in luggage and luggage costs per weight, and you have to, and these are hard covers, you have to be careful. There's also a vendor there in Baltimore that I like to go see. And the reason I do is because they have a lot of Silver Age stuff and Bronze Age stuff, and I like the way they price them. They'll like have like a $5 tier, they'll have the $10 tier and the $20 tier, and they have a lot of key books. So because I don't have my database, if I get a device where I can carry my database on, and it'll be easy to do, I can log in, but a lot of times your bandwidth isn't that great. But if I have it on like one of those Windows new devices and I buy one, then I'll take my whole database with me and just look stuff up. But I usually target things I know for sure. If I think I might have it, then I don't even go there. But if I know for sure I don't have it, then I'll pick them up. But that's it. How about you? Or would you look for any particular key issues?
I might jot down for myself a few things that I know that I've looked for online and I can't find a cheap price. Or just keep my eye out, like you said, for stuff that's discounted that I know. I never see online for very cheap, but and the archive editions are a pretty good example. I could see myself picking up a couple of those because those are always on the expensive side. But like you, a big motivation for me is to meet you and Barb and other people that I talk to that I've become friends with and spend time with them. And may that would be first priority, and then second priority would be to maybe get a chance to meet a couple creators, especially ones that are at this point, like you said, you like to meet Golden Age creators and ones that are maybe you won't have an opportunity to meet
To
in the
see
future.
again, yeah. Don't ever be shy. I'll tell you right now, because you'll regret it. Like if you see one and you're gonna get like the disease where I'm intimidated to go talk to him, you'll regret it if you don't take advantage of that. Especially if there's like no long line, you should just go up and say, "Hey, I appreciate your work, if anything," and start up a conversation, you know. Even if it's a 5-minute question, just ask a question. They'll be glad to answer it.
So those are higher priorities. If I can save up enough, a priority or another priority over getting comics would be sketches, to maybe get a couple sketches.
Yeah, see, that's what I usually do. And for me, they're becoming outrageously expensive, but I have my wheelhouse of artists, and if they are there, I will target them. Unless they get to the point that it's too expensive, then I'll start looking elsewhere. But I like to get 3 to 4 sketches at a con. I mean, that's a goal for me. And usually it's just whatever fits the mood. I got some Valiant ones last time. I don't know if I'll be in the Valiant mood or if I'll be in some kind of DC mood, or I like to do OMAC versus, if Sholi's there. Like I have an OMAC versus Hulk, an OMAC versus Cap.
Nice.
I like to do those ones. Yeah, that's the other thing I like is sketches. The thing that I like about sketches as opposed to like page art the logic makes no sense. But when it exists in a comic book, it exists there. But when you get a sketch, that is the only one. Even if he's done something similar, like it's still the line will be different from another sketch. It won't
Yes.
be the exact thing. It is the uniqueness of it. It's the personal thing of it that makes that sketch so good to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a one of a kind
It's
item.
one of a kind item. And yeah, that might not be something that somebody else will want to buy from you at a future date. Like a page, somebody will say, "Oh, that's a Batman 466. I want to buy that page." But if you're in it for the personal thing of it, that means a lot more. At least
Oh
it does
yeah.
to me.
Yeah, I mean if I get a sketch that I like from a creator that I like, that's going up on the wall and that's staying there, you know?
Yeah.
So I can look at it and remember the getting it and just it's the same reason I buy action figures and stuff. I put them out on display 'cause seeing them makes me happy and makes me feel comfortable, you know, when I sit in the room where they're at, and I have them out on display, and I have some like hard covers on the shelves and stuff. It just that creates an environment for me that just makes me happy and comfortable. And it's like it's decoration, you know, people decorate their houses to create a feeling that makes them happy, and that's decoration to me to see the flash figures and stuff. And so
Yeah.
I like comic books.
So thanks, Kyle. We also thank you for supporting our shows and even going back and listening to the old ones.
Yeah, I've done that with other shows, and the hosts of the shows are always say something to the effect of, "Oh my gosh, I can't imagine listening to the old episodes and why you'd want to do that." And it's funny because I feel like I'm on the other side of that now when he's,
Yeah.
but it's awesome at the same time. It's super awesome. I'm super flattered by the fact that he's going back and wants to re-listen to old episodes. Yeah, that's great.
And then Ivan at Adam Smasher 66 says, "How about thoughts on McFarlane on Infinity Inc. or Mike Grell's Warlord?" So McFarlane did only a few issues of Infinity Inc. And it looked really different. It's weird how McFarlane kind of got his start at DC, and so did Liefeld. In other words, Liefeld started off in Hawk and Dove, and McFarlane did in Infinity Inc.
And Larson too.
Larson Doom Patrol.
Right.
Yeah, so a lot of those guys started at DC, went over to Marvel, and then just broke loose, and then eventually went into Image. I'm real fond of Infinity Inc. To be honest with you, though, I don't remember a lot of details. I remember a lot of Mr. Bones and Helix, you know, the villains. I remember Mr. Bones' cyanide touch. I remember Solomon Grundy a lot appearing in there. I remember the relationships between Jade, Obsidian, and Alan Scott. You know, I remember a lot of the Atom Smasher is obviously your key name, and Atom Smasher comes from Infinity Inc. He was called something else at the time, but so there's a lot of a cool stuff there. Do you have any comments you want to add on McFarlane on Infinity Inc.?
I mean, when I talked about my taste changing from when I was a kid, he's the best example of that. I'm not really a fan anymore. But he was my favorite. Well, Jim Lee might have been my favorite, but he was definitely. I loved Todd McFarlane, and I coveted his Amazing Spider-Man comics and stuff. I only had a couple of them because they were expensive, even at that point. And I still don't really know those creators' DC stuff that well. I've seen some of it, When I was a kid, I didn't even know that those guys started at DC.
Yeah. Like Eric
So.
Larson's stuff was right before Grant Morrison. He like started there,
Yeah.
and
Yeah, I have.
that was a weird transition because they should have renumbered it and just said, here's Doom Patrol volume blah, but number
Yeah.
19 they just continued, and it was like we just talked about Batgirl transition. That was jarring.
Yeah.
That was totally different.
Yeah, I'm pretty surprised that they didn't renumber. I don't know what decides that for DC. 'Cause sometimes you think they would and they don't, and then sometimes you think they're not going to and they do, and I don't know.
And then he asked about Mike Grell's Warlord. It's one of my favorite series. And we talked about sketches. I have three sketches from Mike Grell, and I will get another one this year at the Denver Comic Con if he attends. But I have Warlord and Tara and the girl that changes into a cat. God, I can't think of her name right now. But I have those characters, and I'm looking to get the whole a sketch of all the Warlord cast, even though I want to get a John Sable. Matter of fact, I never pick up Dark Horse Presents, and I saw in the and there's a reason for it, and now that I understand things a little bit better, I will pick it up. I always thought that the material that was in Dark Horse Presents, at least the stuff that I cared about, would make it into a comic book. At least in some cases, it has. In other
Yeah,
words,
sometimes,
they
yeah.
take the anthology and they put it in. But this was Mike Grell. I didn't want to take the chance. And he's doing Tarzan, which is another one of my favorite ones. So I actually picked it up. But I recently read Pastaways, and I was a little confused about it. And it's Matt Kent, who I absolutely love. The two things I went in, if you buy Pastaways, read the cover. There's dialogue on the cover that introduces the characters that's not in the book. So it's important that you read it. It's also important that you read this. I found out afterwards after I was confused. I'm like, where's this stuff? I read the inside cover, which gives you just a paragraph of where you're starting in the story. But the other one is he wrote Dark Horse Presents, which wasn't reprinted, in issue 6, and it kind of told you how they got to where they are, and it's a little jarring without that, in my opinion. So that's why I'm probably going to start looking in Dark Horse Presents a little more carefully, because there is content that doesn't make it back into the book. But what Warlord, do you have any experience with it, or?
No, Mike Grell's more of a recent discovery for me with Green Arrow and what's the series you've talked about on here? From First Comics or whatever it is about the you've covered several issues of it and you keep going back to it.
Oh, John Sable?
Yeah, John
Yeah,
Sable.
freelance.
I've read some of those, but I haven't gotten a chance to check out his Warlord stuff, but I do dig his stuff and would
And
like to at some point.
I just recently read the 2008, I think it was, Warlord that Mike Grell did. He wrote it and he drew sporadically. He drew half of the issues. And it was phenomenal. And the reason I'm going to say that is because it took off from that first series, and it linked his son back into the story. It links stuff back together, and it actually has. I'm going to go ahead and spoil this because it's old, but it actually had the death of Warlord, and then his son took over, who we thought was dead for all these years. And he's the warlord now, and that's how it left before the New 52 took over. So yeah, I love the warlord, and there is no one in my mind that draws sexier women in outfits than in the Warlord. Oh my goodness. So I think we've went through all of the questions, but we had a lot, and that was good. We don't usually get a lot.
Yeah, we spent like a half an hour talking about Batgirl.
Half hour talking about Batgirl and another half hour talking about Def Leppard.
Yeah, women in hair metal videos of the 80s.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to plug in my headset because it's losing its power.
Oh, you're
So
wireless?
yeah, just a second. I left the Are you there?
Yep.
I left the Bluetooth on, unfortunately. So the charge, I only charged it a half hour before we started. And it I had to plug it into the USB port so I didn't lose it.
Gotcha.
Right, so did you want to jump into Buck and talk about that one real quick or?
Yeah, because I think last time was both of our least favorite episodes, so we didn't really talk about it too much. But this one, I think, was a step up from that, at least.
I enjoyed it. A matter of fact, I was telling Barb, oh man, after that last episode, I'm really worried that I don't want to watch it. It left like a weird taste in my mouth, and this one I found interesting. I enjoyed it for the most part. I thought it was pretty good. It was Buck was pretty much deathly ill with some kind of like flu bug that he got on the planet because he didn't wear his respirator like he should have. So he picked up some bug and he was sick the whole time. And that sickness kind of led him to be able to see things that the other people couldn't see. And that's what this whole episode was about, but it was really good.
Yeah, specifically, there are these reptilian creatures called Saurians, and that's the name of the episode, the Saurians. And it aired on January 29th, 1981. But and he sees this sort of green fuzziness around these diplomats that come to the searcher. And these diplomats had just had a peace treaty meeting with a group of Saurians. But we've actually seen at the beginning of the episode a Saurian make himself a duplicate of one of these diplomats. And so we know that Buck is right, that these Saurians, there's about five of them, they're using these devices on their wrists that they tune to a specific frequency that makes them appear as one of the diplomats. And the first time that Buck sees it, he's actually bedridden, but they turn on a monitor that shows him the docking bay, and he sees them, these diplomats arrive, and he sees this sort of green aura around them and only them. But because he's so sick, everyone just thinks it's a symptom of his sickness.
Yeah, it's his fever. He's delirious. And he actually leaves. He like unhooks his medical equipment around him, leaves to that docking bay at some point, like deathly ill, like crawls into there. William Wilma actually runs into him and is kind of like holding him up. And as he's looking, he's still seeing the green auras and he's like, "Wilma, don't you see this? Those people aren't right." And that whole thing goes back and forth like the whole time. And those aliens actually have a doctor. Do you remember what his name was?
The aliens doctor?
Alien doctor, yeah. Dr. Goodfellow's in this here and he's trying to treat him too. But Dr. Goodfellow, it seems like he really thinks that Buck is deathly ill and he's delirious the whole time. Like all the way up until the end. Nobody believes him. Except for maybe Hawk. But he's away. Hawk is away on a mission and Buck can't go with him. And at some point in the show, Wilma has to call him back because she's like, Buck needs you right now. And he turns around and shows up towards the end of the episode. But it's really interesting because the aliens get real concerned. They're like, why is he looking at us strangely? What is he seeing? Is our bands not working for him? Why are they not working? So one of the guys sends them to try to get a blood sample, sends a doctor into there. And he convinces Goodfellow that getting the blood sample will be a good thing. And so this alien goes in there to get the blood sample, and Buck, in his sweat, like, they really did a good job of making him look sick. I
Yeah, he
thought
did.
so. He really looked like feverish. Like when you get the flu and you're like miserable, he really looked like that. And he kind of like looked up at that time, and he was in a lot of pain, and he saw the lizard man. And he kind of like flipped him over and started strangling him before like Wilma and Goodfellow could take him off of there and take him away. So everybody thinks Buck is a loon at this point.
Did you do that to anybody at that con that you were at when you were sick
When I
that
was
time?
delirious, no.
Do you see any reptile people?
I didn't see any reptile people
That'd be pretty.
or green auras. I kind of just knew I needed to get into bed as soon as possible.
That would have been quite a story if you sort like leapt over the table and started strangling Walter Simonson or something.
You're an alien.
Yeah.
Don't you see it? Daryl, don't you see it?
Keith, why aren't you helping me?
Yeah. You have all of your training. Why can't you use it now?
I need brown arrow and pajama jeans, man. Now.
There's a lizard man here. So everybody thinks he's a loon. But the aliens are very, very, very concerned. So what you learn is that whatever virus he has let him see the auras, and then when he's in extreme pain, it like will take the aura away and they'll look like real lizard people. So that's pretty much the way it has it. And then there's one scene in there that's pretty interesting because he gets the doctor in there with Goodfellow and Wilma, and he comes up with this theory about pain, and he tries to cause himself some pain to see if he sees the lizard people, which is kind of bad because even if he saw it, what would make the other two believe it? If he caused himself pain now that he was getting better,
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't really thought about that. What was he gonna do then? Tell them to stick their hand in the thing?
What I was hoping he would do, and what I thought he would do, is stick Wilma's thing in there, cause her pain. Do you see her? Do you see the lizard? But that wasn't the case.
No, it didn't work, so that just would have been even worse if he made somebody else do it.
Yeah.
Eventually, I think Wilma's the first one to start to believe him, right? Because she has a really good point. She says, you can't hallucinate something you haven't seen.
Right.
And she realizes Buck's never even seen a Saurian. So she shows him tape of the peace conference between the Saurians and the delegates. And when he sees the Saurians, he says, yeah, that's what I saw. And he's never seen one before this moment. So that's pretty clever on her part, and that's what gets her to believe him.
Yeah.
And while all this is going on, the thing with the Saurians is, as they're pretending to be the delegates, they've messed with the searcher so that it's thrown off of its flight path, and they end up heading towards this, it was like a demilitarized zone or something
Yeah, it was a
that I know that they're
DMZ,
not, yeah,
which was
supposed to
a
enter.
cool looking ship. It looked like a Pentagon or something. It was but they also had a Sauron on there because at the beginning of the episode, a Sauron comes on and attacks the one guy that's working there on in the DMZ or whatever you want to call it, and takes over him and takes his face, takes his the way he looks. So now they have a guy planted in that building, and the ship, the searcher is headed towards there, and they want to kind of blast him out of the sky at some point because they don't have the right codes to get by there.
Yeah, so when they don't have the right codes, the guy that's in impersonating the ambassador of the delegates, the Zorian that's been impersonating him, says, "I don't have the codes, but you're looking right at me. You can see that I'm the ambassador." And so they actually go and get the guy on the other side of the screen goes and gets his boss, basically, like when you are talking to customer service and they're not helping you. And can you go get your supervisor? That's what I always say. Just like that. I'm a big jerk. Not really. Anyways, so Buck comes up with a plan, knowing that these are reptilian creatures. He sees that the technician, because they did something to the frequency of the things on their wrists, where Buck wasn't seeing them as Saurians anymore, but they never told the guy that they left at the base to do his. So Buck sees him as a Saurian because his is still set at the old frequency where Buck could see them. So Buck drops the temperature on the bridge. Everyone's starting to freeze, and he keeps lowering the temperature, and eventually the Saurians just flat out drop and hit the floor, and their disguises are gone. And it's because they're cold-blooded like other reptiles, and they get to a certain point. He basically forced them into hibernation. And that's kind of it, but it was cool that it was an episode that occurred all on the Searcher. Twiggy's voice still really sucked.
I actually thought that Twiggy's voice was going to be different,
I
but
think
it's a
it's the
couple
next one.
episodes out.
Yeah,
Yeah.
but.
So like when the episode started, and Twiggy was there, I said, "Barb, this is the one where he gets his voice back." And then he spoke, and then I'm like, "Oh no."
Yeah, because he actually does have a few lines and does something, so it would have been a good time, but maybe it just twisted the knife for fans even more to finally get them to bring the regular voice back. But there was kind of a funny end scene with Twiggy and Crichton, where Twiggy is bringing a bouquet of flowers to Buck as a get well thing, and Crichton's does just understand the custom, and he says, "Why are you bringing a handful of decaying vegetable matter to a man who is defunctional or dysfunctional?" I liked the writing there.
I do like Crichton more in this season than I do Twiggy. He at
Yeah, so
least
far, yeah.
adds the humor that we're missing from there in a different way. Do you know what I mean? Because he's so damn serious and
Yeah.
logical that he adds humor to the show a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was a much better episode
For sure.
than we have had.
Yeah, definitely better than the last one.
You want to take like a 3 minute break? I drank too much water.
Yeah, sure.
All right, I'll be right back.
Okay.
All right, we're back.
We're back.
All right, you want to jump into books?
Yeah, well, yes and no.
Okay.
because I did something a little different this time, if it's all right if I start.
Yeah, go ahead.
What I'm going to do is I actually watched some Star Trek original series. So while we're on old TV, I'm just going to really quickly go through what I watched because I watched a bunch of episodes, but I'm not going to talk at length about any of them.
In order or just random?
Yeah, in order.
Okay.
I didn't remember where I'd left off. I'd said before a couple times I had watched a handful of episodes and then took a long break and then picked up and watched another handful of episodes. And thankfully, Netflix remembered for me where I was at, which is very convenient. So I just picked up where I left off. And I don't know if the season is just getting better, or if I'm more in the mood, but I was really enjoying them and appreciating the way that the episodes, one to the next, could be very different from each other. So I started with the Galileo 7, and that is an episode where Spock leads a team with McCoy and Scott on a shuttlecraft. And it's actually the first appearance of the shuttlecraft, and it gets pulled off course, and they have to land on this planet And I like this one because I'm finding I really like Spock a lot, and there's a lot of focus on his Vulcan nature, and the other passengers of the shuttlecraft are really frustrated with his command decisions because so much of it's based on logic and not emotion. And when a couple members of their craft get killed, some of the other members want to do a funeral, and he doesn't want to waste the time. And so I enjoyed that. The next episode was The Squire of Gothos, and this is the one where they go to a planet where there's this guy who turns out to be an alien child, actually, and he's going by the name Treelane, and he's obsessed with Earth wars, and he messes with the crew a lot, and that was pretty good. The actor William Campbell played Treelane was really good, so he kind of made the episode, and that one was really good too. After that was Arena, and this is the only one that I was a little less crazy about. This is one where Kirk has to fight a reptilian creature called a Gorn in Trial by Combat on this planet. They have to fight to the death. And the Gorn itself looks really terrible. I mean, I'm not very critical of older special effects and stuff, but it looks pretty bad. And
It's a pretty popular scene, though,
I
like
know, and
in Star Trek lore.
yeah, I've seen clips, I've seen pictures of Kirk from this battle and stuff, and the fight choreography was, I thought, was pretty bad. I actually laughed out loud when Kirk throws a rock and it bounces off the Gorn's chest. It just was really silly. And then, later on, the crew ends up watching the battle between the two of them on the monitor, and I think it's basically because they don't have anything else to do in the episode, so they're just basically watching what we're watching on TV. But the rest of the ones I watched were all really good. There was Tomorrow Is Yesterday, which is an episode where they end up back in the year 1969, and they end up with a pilot on their ship that was pursuing them in a jet fighter, and they have to sort of erase their traces before they leave and go back into the future. Court Martial, where Kirk stands trial. They have video evidence that he ejected this research pod containing Lieutenant Commander Ben Finney before the ship, the Enterprise, was at red alert status. But it was actually turns out to be doctored by Ben Finney, who wants to get Kirk in trouble. And the court scene's really cool. It was a really good episode for William Shatner, I thought. And then two more. Return of the Archons was pretty neat. They go to planet Beta 3, and like 100 years ago, this USS Archon had disappeared, and they're trying to figure out what happened. And they go down to the planet, and people are living like it's the 19th century. And I was laughing and thinking of you and Bill, because they have this festival, and when it reaches a certain time, it's like basically the people become the crossed because they just go crazy. And I think if it was like an R-rated show, they would have had people just having sex in the street and stuff because they're jumping on each other and kissing and stuff. And right before this, they're acting all proper, but they just start throwing furniture through store windows and lighting stuff on fire. I mean, they just go nuts, and women are jumping up on top of men and they're kissing. And it's the planet's ruled over by this being called Landru, and McCoy ends up getting reprogrammed and acting. They talk about, are you part of the body? The body is great. And but it turns out that Landru's actually this computer that was programmed by a guy named Landru, but for years and years, the civilization has just been living under the rule of this computer program. And then finally, last but not least, I watched Space Seed. And this was probably the best of them all. No surprise, this is the episode that's the prelude kind of Wrath of Khan. The Enterprise finds SS Botany Bay, and it's a ship that was launched from the Earth in the 1990s during the Eugenics Wars. The crew's in suspended animation, and so they start up the systems, and the ship is set to reactivate its commander first, and that is Khan, Ricardo Montalban, and he ends up trying to take over the Enterprise. And then, it ends with Khan and his people, instead of putting them to the death or whatever, or putting them in jail, Kirk decides to exile them to this planet. That sets up the scenario that they'll follow up on Wrath of Khan, which I have never seen. And I'd never seen any of these
I don't
episodes, so.
think I've seen those two episodes.
Yeah, if you like, I know you like Wrath of
I've
Khan.
seen a couple of the earlier ones that you talked about, but I didn't see this one or the Khan one. I know of them. I've seen stills of them, but I've never seen the episode.
Yeah, I would think that if you saw Wrath of Khan, it would be really cool to watch Space Seed. It was really good. The only part, and I thought of you again because you always notice in Buck Rogers when the stunt double is really bad. The only thing I would say that was bad about Space Seed is there's a fight, the big fight at the end between Kirk and Khan. Terrible, terrible stunt double. I mean, it is just right in your face that it is not William Shatner. And it is just so bad.
Did he have like, was he bald and
No, I mean, he had the same hair, but it was just, I
he
don't
was
know
like
if it's.
7 foot tall? Was it like the Buck sign where the guy was like
It's just you
lanky?
could see his face in it, and so
Oh.
clearly. You could see his face so clearly, and I don't know if it's an effect of the difference between these remastered episodes that are being watched on different types of TVs versus what they broadcast, but it's so obvious, and it's really bad, but it doesn't ruin the episode. I mean, it was an awesome episode. So, I said before on the show that I just don't have the history with Star Trek, but it's not because I don't like it. I'm not going to just watch it because I feel like I have to. I mean, if I'm not enjoying it, but it is kind of fun to finally see things that people around me are always talking about.
Yeah, if you're in the mood.
Yeah, and I was in the mood. I wanted to watch a show that was older, sci-fi, so. Yeah,
That
so
was
that'll
cool.
count for one of mine.
I was thinking of doing something similar, but I just haven't gotten around because I've been wanting to watch Netflix lately. My first book is going to be All Stars Comics number 3.
Nice.
And this is not the real book. I could have owned it for $7,000, but I didn't have $7,000 on me. But I did have it in my hand. I don't know if you heard, but my comic shop guy acquired a Golden Age collection from a hoarder, and the hoarder wasn't selling to him. It was the guy that was clean. The hoarder actually passed away, and this company paid this guy to go clean the house, and it was like you see on TV where the hoarding is from bottom of the floor almost to the roof, just the what looks like junk. But he got into this room of newspaper. This is almost like something that's really on the TV show because you see this on the TV show Hoarders. But he went through a bunch of newspapers, and inside those newspapers was a lot of Golden Age comics, and he ran across All Star Comics number 3. And my shop owner, as a joke, or I don't know if he was really considering that I would spend that much, but he put All Star Comics 3 in my pull box. So when he handed me my pull box, it had All Star Comics 3, and I touched it and I almost passed out. It was in one of those hard plastics, so I didn't really like touch it, but I saw it and I was like, I haven't seen All Star Comics number 3. The only time I may have seen it is the museum in Baltimore. They have a the guy who owns Diamond Jeppy. He has like a museum of comics in there, and I may have seen it there, but I've never seen it before. And this time I actually touched it, and it was in my pull box. I immediately flipped it over to see what it was going for, and he had the first price, and he like ranked it like the grade below good, but honestly, it looked better than good if you just looked at the cover. And the reason he said he didn't know what was going on is because it was missing one page in the middle. And I still don't know what that one page is because I never opened it. But he was trying to sell this for 7 grand, and he would have given me a discount, which should have brought it down another couple grand, but I didn't have it. So I really wanted to read All Star Comics number 3. And he had some of the archives on sale for 50% off. And he had volume 1. Volume 0 is actually All Star Comics 1 and 2 before they were a team, the JSA.
Yeah, and they released that volume later on.
Yeah.
In other words, they didn't put out zero and then number one and then number two. They went back and put out number zero later on.
Yeah. But the one thing I really liked about the archives, and I haven't read a lot of them, I own a few. None that were Golden Age except for military comics, because I bought the Black Hawk volume. Is it has on the inside cover of, it shows you the cover, and then it shows you the ads from All Star Comics number 3. He said it shows you here's what the inside cover is, here's what this is, and here's what that is. It's really cool. And the way they're joined is kind of like one of those weird stories in, Justice League of America, where they had all these team ups, but they weren't really team ups. It's like two characters would go off on a mission, and another two characters would go off on a mission in this. But what it is the JSA are forming a team, and they did not invite Johnny Thunder, and he's mad about it. But he's got the power of Sayo. You don't really see the Thunderbolt, but you do see that he's able to make wishes that come true. And what he's like going, he goes, God, I can't believe they didn't invite me, but I wish I was in there. I was going to the meeting. I wish I was going to the meeting. And he ends up going to the meeting, and he runs into like Dr. Fate, and he's like, what, why are you or not at the meeting? He says, I'm on the way there, but when I ran into these people that were fast asleep because the Sandman had knocked them out. And then he runs into the Flash, and he says something like, "Hey, cool down, Mr. Flash. You ain't so hot." And then he starts shivering because everything that Johnny Thunder says is literal. And he says, "I wish the other members of the JSA would show up," and they actually show up. And then he also says, "I ain't got a swell head. It's a small head look." And his head shrinks into like this small head. So it's kind of like a really interesting thing because. Johnny Thunder is kind of like the instigator of the entire story. He then talks to Flash, Jay Garrick, and he says, "Can you tell me a good adventure?" And he tells him an adventure of where he was with this girl and his girlfriend and another girl, and that girl says, "Yeah, my father's trying to search for an Aztec treasure in the ocean," and he hears about it. And he hears that these pirates are going to go after him, and he actually speeds away, becomes Jay Garrick, and goes and helps that fa father find the treasure. And what's really interesting about this Jay Garrick story is he runs into a scene where he's like swimming underwater, and he runs into a shark, and the shark has a thought bubble. So
Nice.
he's like swimming. The shark says, "Am I seeing things, or wasn't there a nice juicy man here?" And then Flash grabs him by the tail and starts whirling him around, and the shark is going, "What have I got a hold of? Or has he got a hold of me?" And then as he's spinning the shark around by his tail, the shark's thought bubble says, "Mama, help me, mama." I thought that was kind of hilarious. But these pirates are pretty bad pirates. And even though Jay tries to foil him a couple times, they keep coming after him because they don't want this guy to find the gold. Well, Jay finds the gold and then leads this guy to the gold and ends up foiling these pirates. And then going back on the same day, back to the meal that they were having for dinner, where Joan is with that other lady and lets him know the good news that her father found the treasure. So it was an interesting one. Then they have a Hawkman story which is pretty much Sarah or Sierra going to investigate a volcano and find out why there's these men of fire that she's trying to investigate. And Hawkman goes along with her, and she investigates and is immediately attacked. And they the cool thing about this is Hawkman and Sierra get into these asbestos suits. If they only knew how asbestos was really bad.
Oh
But
yeah, you see that over and over again
yeah,
with
one of
Human Torch and early Fantastic Four.
yeah. Asbestos. And the thing about her suit is she's in this like dress of asbestos. Like she's not in a costume or anything. She just gets in this
Nice.
dress of asbestos, and they go into this volcano, and they end up fighting a bunch of these fire men who are also in asbestos suits. But there's this villain called Mazda, and they end up fighting him, and that's what that is. And it's the story about their fight with him. And then the Spectre story is a bunch of. The thing about Golden Age Spectre that I think is kind of nice though is they have a lot of violence, and that's what the Spectre's about, is there's a lot of murders, and he's actually trying to discover who these murders are, and they only happen during a full moon, so they think they have a serial killer. Well, it turns out to be this weird god that's a statue. He's called Om, Oom. And every time there's a full moon, he goes after people and kills them. And he's like a mischievous god of some sort, because he always mumbles like death, 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 death. And Spectre and him make a deal that if he th they go into space and they have to find this moonstone of Yasgaratl, which is a weird pronunciation, but and if whoever finds the rock, if Spectre gets the rock and brings it back to Earth, that this Om will leave Earth and go elsewhere. Well, that actually works out, and Om has to leave, but he lies. He basically says, I'm not going away. So the Spectre has to trick him, and he ends up turning him. He ends up taking his spirit and putting it into this gem that he just snatched, and launching it into space and getting rid of his soul, whereas his body stays as a statue on a pillar. So that was kind of cool, because it has a very Silver Age feel to it. And then there's an Hourman story where the Hourman's boss at the chemical company tells him to take his daughter to a costume ball, and he says, "You know what I'm going to dress as? I'm going to dress as Hourman." But a lot of the thieves dressed as Hourman too, so it makes the situation really awkward. Is there's like 15 or there's like 6 Hourmans trying to rob the place, and they kill cops, and he's dressed as Hourman, and he has to be the hero. So the police are after him because they think he's one of the men, and he has to foil that. And then it has this weird interlude with Red Tornado, the Golden Age Red Tornado, which is Ma Huckle.
Oh, yeah.
And she wanted to come to the All-Star meeting, and she slips into the through the window and says, "I wasn't invited here, but I want to be a member, blah blah blah." And they said, "Okay, why don't you feel at home? You've had all those adventures. Why don't you take your cape off and take your mask off, because we all know each other here." And she says, "I can't do that." And later on, it's kind of like the humor part, is you find out that Ma Huckle's pants were ripped when she was climbing into the window, and she didn't want to remove her cape because she would have shown her bare ass. But it also has the ad in the center that was of All Star Comics, which shows Flash Comics number 13, All American Comics number 22, Action Comics and Superman, All-Star Comics, Adventure Comics, Fun Comics, Batman and Detective Comics. And what's really fascinating about the Golden Age is during this time, all these characters, their major characters, were in anthologies, and the anthologies would have all kinds of characters, and those characters would be, if they were a hit, like Action Comics, they would spawn off their own bi-monthly comic like Superman or Batman. So it's a cool little trip down memory lane. And then there's a Sandman with Wesley Dodds and Diane Belmont. What I know about Sandman is mostly from the Vertigo title, Sandman Mystery Science Theater, Mystery Theater, whatever it's called. I want to say Mystery Science Theater based off the TV show, but it's called Sandman Mystery Theater. It's a phenomenal series, and him and Diane are going out on an adventure, and they run into this man that's usually tall, and he dies, and they call him a man of skin, and they're finding all these large bodies of men that are dead, and they find out that it has to do with this doctor, this doctor that's enlarging, doing something with their pituitary glands, Faversham, and they have to go after him, and they run into like giant mice and cats and have to deal with it, and the one guy that they rescue says he's releasing them to basically take money and stuff like that and make him rich, and take insurance money from him. So when they die, he put insurance bonds on these people, and when they die, he'd make money off of them because he enlarged them. But the Sandman takes him out. And then there's a nice Dr. Fate story with Inza, which she's becomes Inza Nelson. But she's just buying stuff from a old bookstore, and she runs into this old mystery box. And she was gonna buy the lamp from the curator, but there's this mystery lady who no one else can see that gives her like a Pandora's box, essentially. And there's an adventure with that because that Pandora box links to her and puts her life in danger, and Dr. Fate has to rescue her, and he ends up fighting a wizard who was the curator of that shop in just a different guise. And the thing about this one that's interesting is gets in a fight with the wizard, and non-magically he gets into a physical fight and flips him over and breaks his neck. I thought that was kind of interesting in a Golden Age comic to see. But they also have a prose story with Johnny Thunder, which is really, really good. But it's kind of a love story. He fell in love with this girl, and the girl, he brought her flowers, and some other rich asshole brought her flowers. Kind of reminded me of The Rocketeer, if you ever see that movie, where Cliff Secord is in jeopardy of losing his girl to that actor. Well, there's this rich guy, Edgar, that she's in jeopardy of losing, even though he has the power to say, he uses those terms, say
Say
you.
you, yeah.
Yeah, and he gets hired. She goes off, runs off with this other guy, but he gets hired as a bodyguard for this rich lady. And it turns out that he's going after this rich lady. The guy that's dating his girlfriend is going after this rich lady and wants to kidnap her and held her hostage. And Johnny's a bodyguard for that, so he foils that attempt. And frees the daughter of the rich man, and you think that Johnny might hook up with the rich guy's daughter that he was being a bodyguard for, but his old girlfriend comes back and belts the other rich daughter and says, "I want you back." I thought that was funny. And then there's a story of the Atom, who doesn't have any powers, but he's kind of a badass, and it's a heist story. They're going after these gold bars in an armor truck, but the people that are sending the armor truck are smart enough to not put the gold bars in the armor truck, and they put them into just a regular truck, and they both go in different directions. But the people that are doing the heist are aware of that, and they go after the right truck, and Adam has to foil that. And the girl that's in that one wants to unmask him at some point. They're both archaeologist students. And she's a student in the class because that's how it opens up, is they're both in class trying to do class activity. She's always wondering, where is that guy? Is he not going to do his homework? Or And the other thing that's cool about this All-Star Comics that does really well is at the bottom of each story, it says, "Follow the adventures of the Atom every month in All American Comics." So you actually know where to find more stories of that character. And then they get a letter from the FBI saying they need to have the JSA, and it's going to be of high importance. And they said we need to get you in Washington right away. Well, they send Jay Garrick because he can get to Washington immediately and says, "Why don't you go find out what's going on while we tell Alan Scott's story?" And Alan Scott's just pretty much about like a commissioner, like Commissioner Gordon, who's a good commissioner, and he gets foiled and loses his job because somebody's framing him, and another commissioner comes in, and that commissioner is evil, but crime clears up. He's just doing like white collar crime, you know, loitering money, doing all these gambling things, and Alan Scott finds out this stuff with a reporter and takes him out and restores the commissioner to his job. The interesting thing about the Lantern Ring in here is it's almost like Wonder Woman's lasso at some point, where he could tell if people are telling the truth or not and make them tell the truth. That was kind of cool. But that's the end of the story, and then Jay Garrick comes back and says, "You know, we need to go back to Washington. They have an adventure for us, and you'll be continued in All-Star Comics number 4." But that's All-Star Comics number 3, which was pretty much Johnny just crashing a party and asking all the members to tell a story about themselves.
Nice.
Yeah.
You
So
definitely.
I bought volume 1, 2, and 3.
Oh, okay. Well, he didn't get $7,000 from you, but he inspired you to spend something.
Yeah, he did.
That's hilarious that
But
he put that in your pull box, though. That's
it
so
is,
funny.
and he did know of one defect, but I don't know what the one defect is because we didn't open it. The guy told him it was missing a page, and it was an ad page, but I'm thinking it was that ad in the middle that had the All-Star Comics in it, you know, where it had all the different comics that were being published by DC. But if he was missing that page, he's missing the other two pages on the other side of it that would have story on it. But anyway, it was such a valuable book that he basically said, because of its rarity, he sent it off to CGC to see what would happen. So I'm really curious to see how that book comes back.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Well, I'm glad that you decided not to buy it, because,
Because I would have been a dead man.
yeah, either that or a
Would
single
be no
man.
more Retrocast.
Yeah. Either it'd be no, or you'd just be really depressed for a while. But, well, our silent co-host has joined us, my Dusty the Cat.
Yeah.
If you hear purring in the background. But I don't know if he read any comics. He always tries to. I always. Because,
Probably wants to play with them a little bit.
yeah, well, he thinks that the my comic boxes are actually there for him to use as a scratching post.
Ah.
But he doesn't have his front claws, so it's okay. But it cracks me up, because he'll come up and he'll usually use the second tiered one, like on the drawer boxes. So he'll go up to it and he'll go ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch with his hands. Now, I always ask him, "Are you trying to read some comics? Are you trying to pick out some comics to read?" So, all right. Well, last time we had a whole lot of questions. Thanks to William Purcell, who is a loyal listener of the show, and he sent me a quasi recommendation slash request, I guess you could call it, of something that he read on Marvel Unlimited. So I decided to check it out, and as soon as I started reading it, I realized that it was a follow-up to a story that I've talked about on Retro. I looked it up, actually. It was Retro 33. So it was almost a year ago, which was Captain America 253 and 254. And what he recommended was a 3-issue miniseries, Union Jack, which came out at the end of 1998, beginning of 1999. It was written by Ben Raab and John Cassaday, and the art was by John Cassaday. Yeah, I mean, I really actually. Thanks for the recommendation, William, because I really enjoyed this. It was really cool. So at the end of that Captain America story, we see the new Union Jack becomes this guy named Joe Chapman, who's buddies with Kenneth Crichton, who was should have been the next in line to be Union Jack, but he has a rare form of anemia. He's just not physically well enough. His mother is Jacqueline Farnsworth, who was Spitfire, and she looks, she should be in her 70s or 80s, but she looks young because she at one point she had a blood transfusion from the android Human Torch, and that's kept her young. So it starts out with Union Jack fighting vampires in a church. And he's about to be overwhelmed at some point by a whole bunch of them when the sun comes up and shines through this broken stained glass window. There's this really cool splash page where the thick beam of sunlight is coming in, hitting the ground and the church, and Union Jack is just bowing down in the light and saying amen, because of the way that he was saved. But so Chapman, he goes with Kenneth to a funeral. Kenneth has had been friends with this boy named Christopher Sinclair, who has the same disease as them, and they were both being treated at St. Mary's Hospice. But the young boy has succumbed to the disease and passed away, so Joe goes with Kenneth to support him. And this becomes important later in the story. Another character in the story is Romany Wisdom, and she's the sister of Pete Wisdom. She hasn't made a lot of appearances in comics outside of this miniseries, but she was introduced in the Pride and Wisdom miniseries that came out before this, apparently.
I thought Pride
And
and
she's.
Wisdom was a later series. That's interesting.
Yeah, I guess it came out a little before this. And she's the
Yeah,
ex-girlfriend of Joe Chapman.
1996. This is a weird, interesting era because I think in 96 and 98 I wasn't getting any Marvel. Because I noticed their logos changed where they have the big icon in the left-hand side.
Yeah. I think this was right before I started getting some Marvel or getting comics again in general, or right around the time I did, but I didn't read this. I didn't have any knowledge of the character. But so Romany, she's Joe's ex-girlfriend, and she kind of has this like attitude where she's sort of sick of his shit, but they still talk to each other. And she has knowledge of the occult and stuff, so he takes this amulet to her that he found, and she identifies it as El Nacimiento de Sangre Inmortal, the nativity of immortal blood. And it's a symbol of eternal life and unbroken faith, commonly associated with a congregation of heretical religious zealots established in the 16th century. And so then she tells him a story about this in the 16th century when there's this vampire cult, and this church in Spain was slaughtered by this vampire cult, and the church was supposedly founded by Joseph of Arimathea. And Joseph of Arimathea is supposedly in like myth and history outside of this comic. He is supposedly the man who gave Jesus his tombs. I totally did not plan the connection to Easter, which is when we're recording. It was the tomb that Jesus was buried in was supposedly this Joseph of Arimathea's. He is a rich man who gave Jesus his tomb, and he's also supposed to be the individual who spread Christianity to Britain, and also brought the Holy Grail to Britain. So he's all tied in with like the King Arthur myths and stuff, and these vampires that killed these Spanish Christians in this church in the 16th century, that was a church that he founded on his way to Britain. And the legend goes that the vampires were looking for the Holy Grail. So a lot of backstory there, but I found it interesting. At the end of the first issue, Christopher, the boy that died, he shows up as a vampire at the castle and is trying to get Kenneth to follow him and become a vampire as well. So the rest of the story follows on from a lot of that background information that you get. In issue two, there's a Union Jack goes to the Museum of Natural History, and there's a curator there who he talks to. They have a grail. He says it's not really the real thing, but it's really old. But he also tells him about this scroll that was found in 1921 near Glastonbury, which is, as the Arthur legends go, is where, like, all the King Arthur stuff happened. And some believe this scroll belonged to a cult, the cult of vampires. Well, this scroll coincidentally was stolen a month ago before the stories. And the Grail is supposed to go to this museum in New York City. So we finally meet this woman, and she's calling herself the Baroness. And she's having this scroll. She's the one that stole the scroll, and she's having it translated. And it gets translated, and one of her vampires tells her that the date it revealed was this upcoming Christmas. Well, Kenneth, tired of being ill, he shows up and he actually goes to the Baroness and asks to be changed. And while this is going on, Chapman calls this museum in New York that supposedly is going to be getting this grail shipment, and the curator at the museum in New York, he doesn't know anything about this. They're not having any grail being sent to them. So Cat Chapman's like, uh-oh. He goes to the history museum at night and finds the curator that he talked to earlier dead. And he gets attacked by Baron Blood. Well, Baron Blood is supposed to be dead, decapitated by Captain America back in that story. And the second issue ends with him shocked to discover that his friend Kenneth is the new Baron Blood. And in issue three, starts with two of them fighting, and Kenneth bites Union Jack, but his suit is lined with holy water, which saves him. But unfortunately, the vampires get away with the Grail. And then the climax of the story happens at Lady Crichton's Christmas party at Fallsworth Manor. And Union Jack finds that there's bombs set around the manor. And he's able to disable three of them before he's attacked by a huge horde of vampires, and can't get to the last one, and the house blows up. And the only reason he survives is that Lady Crichton still has her Spitfire powers, which includes speed, so she's able to get herself and Union Jack free of the explosion. And at that moment, Christopher shows up and gives them the information about what the Baron and the Baroness are doing, because he says even though he's also a vampire, he doesn't associate with them and he's not interested in following the path that they're going down. So he tells them they're going to be at the Abbey in Glastonbury. And before Union Jack can get there, the Baroness drinks from the Holy Grail. And then, to the surprise of all the vampires that are gathered, she shatters it in her hands, the Grail itself. It's really frail at this point, being so old, before any of the other vampires can drink from it. And just then the sun comes up, and so these vampires start freaking out and turning to dust. And Union Jack gets there just in time to hold Kenneth, his friend, as he disintegrates in his hands. And the Baroness, though, says something cryptic about how Kenneth will still live on. Well, in the epilogue of the story, 8 months later, we're told we see the Baroness. She's in the Mojave Desert. She's totally immune to sunlight because of drinking from the Grail and seemingly pregnant. And then it ends with Joe Chapman and Jacqueline Farnsworth at the grave of Kenneth Farnsworth.
Wow.
So
Wonder where that's continued in.
I was asked myself in the same question when I finished reading it, and my first thought was there was a Union Jack story, like in a mini series in like 2006. When I was looking at like the characters' profiles on Comic Book DB, I
Yeah.
think that there was a Invaders series a little few years earlier than that, that Union Jack was part of the Invaders in that version, and I think there's like a storyline that continues on, and the Baroness reappears in that series.
Wonder what
It's something
happens
like
that she's
that.
pregnant, though.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna read some more to follow the story up, but it was really good art, really cool story, lots of fun history and stuff, and really not a lot had been done with this Union Jack character in American comics. There was a series between that Captain America story and this one called Knights of Pendragon that lasted for 18 issues, but it
Oh,
was
that
only,
was UK. That
yeah, it
was
was only
their
Marvel
UK.
UK. Yeah, in the 90s it came out. But other than that, up to when this miniseries was done, not a lot had been done. So cool character, cool story, good art by John Cassaday. And ties into Easter, surprisingly.
Yeah, a lot of religious stuff in there too. So,
Yeah,
sounds like a
so.
lot of historical stuff.
Yeah, so yeah, thanks for the recommendation, William. I very much enjoyed it.
That seems like a book that a lot of people probably hadn't read.
Yeah.
It's a mini series and it's kind of a mini series on a character that, unless you're an Invaders fan, or a Marvel UK fan, you probably don't know a lot about.
Right. But, and the issues are a little longer. I think they were like 30, around 30 pages.
Yeah.
So there are three issues, but they were a little longer too.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to mention before I started my last book was I forgot to mention who the writer was for All-Star Comics. It was Gardner Fox. And a lot of these artists that are Golden Age, I don't recognize, but it's Everett E. Hilbard, Sheldon Moldoff. I have heard of Sheldon Moldoff,
Yeah.
Bernard Bailey, Craig Flessel, Howard Sherman. And see, I think they broke out a lot of the art based on the character that they were drawing. Let's see if there's anybody else there. Ben Flitton and Martin Nodell. Oh, so I've heard of Sheldon Moldoff and Martin Nodell. So of all those artists, I know two of them. But I forgot to mention that. My last book is I have a lot of fond memories of, and it really held up. I really held up. I'm going to talk about Blue Beetle number 1 and 2 by Len Wein and
Oh,
Paris
cool.
Collins. This happened pretty much right near Crisis of Infinite Earths, and they relaunched it. It's when they had got the Charlton characters and had put them in Crisis, and a lot of the characters spun off into their own series, like Blue Beetle. Captain Atom had a really good run, even longer than Blue Beetle. And the Question. So you had a lot of the characters, and then you had like Nightshade appearing in Suicide Squad, and a lot of these characters that were there. Peter Cannon Thunderbolt even had his own series. I think that one came much later though. But this series is the Ted Kord. It does a really good job of telling you the Dan Garrett story too. If you watch Batman Brave and the Bold, they do a good recap of Dan Garrett and the origin of the Blue Beetle, because the Dan Garrett Blue Beetle was empowered by the Scarab, so he had powers much like the current Blue Beetle, who's got the Scarab, but that's more from an alien. But this story opens up with a bunch of fires happening in Chicago, the Windy City, and I guess Blue Beetle is actually in Detroit, because when his aircraft goes underneath, the bug goes underneath the water and reappears there in Detroit, Michigan. But what he's investigating is a bunch of fires in Chicago, and they seem to be targeting a the fire department. This is going after the one of the fire chiefs. His house is on fire, or his apartment building's on fire, and Blue Beetle comes crashing through on the bug with that little cord that he comes down on, which looks awesome. Like Paris Cullens draws the shit out of Blue Beetle. It's awesome looking. And he runs into this guy called Firefist, the incendiary man. And he basically looks bulky, like huge character, bulky armor with these huge fists that have these things on the fingers that release fire. He gets into this fight with them and eventually burns the whole building down. Blue Beetle fights him and is not able to take him down and gets lost in the fire. And he ends up hearing that there's a firefighter there, and he actually rescues the firefighter using the bug and pulls him out of the fire and takes him to the fire chief. And the fire chief wants to question him a lot, like, is this guy a good guy? And he says, well, one thing I will tell you is that the villain is Firefist, the incendiary man. And he takes off, and the fire chief is kind of mad, but the guy that he rescued is real happy because he's got his life, and he would have burned to death. And that's where you see him flying through into Michigan, Lake Michigan, and he goes into his alternate identity, and he gives a flashback story of Dan Garrett. He essentially his old college professor, Dan Garrett, and him went to this island. And on that island, Pago Island, they ran into Jarvis Cord, who's the uncle of Ted Cord, and he was creating these like robotic villains to actually take over the world. And Dan Garrett turned into the Blue Beetle and defeated them, but Jarvis Cord blew up the whole island along with the robots in a suicide attempt and killed ten. Dan Garrett. And Dan basically told Ted, he says, promise me you'll carry on for me without the scarab. So he's actually telling Ted to become Blue Beetle with no powers.
Yeah.
And that's where he uses his technical abilities as when he graduates and forms Cord Industries. And they introduce a character in here called Angie, and she's like the clerical worker up front as you enter in Cord Industries. And she seems like a really good employee, but there's something mischievous going on here because you see thought bubbles from her, and I pray you never have to find out. Like she's doing something that she doesn't want Ted to find out about. He enters into the lab, and he's got two key people working there, Jeremiah and his girlfriend Melody. His Melody works for him, so that's kind of an interesting thing. But Jeremiah is an older man, African American guy, and they're doing an experiment that blows up, and Ted gets pissed off because he's like, "Why are you doing this experiment? I'm not paying you to do this experiment. I'm paying you to do this." So they're off like doing their own experiments. And then Ted isn't happy about it, but Melody cools him down, and they seem like they have a really good relationship. And he gives Melody this piece of charred wood, and he says, "Can you do a chemical analysis on it?" Because he wants to know what Firefist is burning down these buildings with. And then the scene cuts to Pago Island, where there's another archaeologist there searching for what Dan Garrett was after. And his name is Conrad Carpax, and they never really get back to that, other than he's looking for Dan Garrett's stuff, and those ro in he might find something, but in the first two issues he doesn't. And then you learn that Ted Cord works with a guy, Dr. Takimoto at Star Labs, and Takimoto is basically looking for Ted to help him try to find out or try to find out more on this thing called promethium. They're trying to make this like armor plating with promethium and titanium, and it keeps causing problems. And Ted is a specialist scientist in this kind of stuff, and he wants his help. And you see another mischievous character in the back. So Len Wein is like issue one, he's putting in a lot of plot threads.
Yeah.
He's just like throwing a bunch of stuff out at you while keeping the main thread moving, which is amazing. I love when writers do that. That's like old school. Like instead of having a 6-issue arc, they're plotting long term, you know?
Yeah, I love that.
I missed that actually.
Me too.
That's one thing that's missing in our comics today. And then you have another side arc where they introduce Lieutenant Max Fisher, and he's basically talking to another detective, and they're saying, you know what? Dan Garrett isn't killed in an accident. He was murdered. Let's go find out what's going on. And so he's investigating Dan Garrett's murder, and then Ted goes back to fight Fire Fist because there's another fire, and this time it's Engine Company Number 47. The whole fire department is on fire, and Fire Fist is there. So he's targeting firemen, you know, that's what he's doing. And Blue Beetle, the action scenes are awesome. Paris Cullens draws flips and stuff, so you'll see like the whole action of Blue Beetle doing his thing in the fight scenes. Like when he's doing flips, you see all the movement, and then him kicking Fire Fist in the face, and he gets in this fest. And Fire Fist doesn't look like he wants to kill Blue Beetle. It's just that he keeps getting in the way, and he pretty much drops the whole building on him. And he says, burn, 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 and Blue Beetle's pinned. And that's how issue one ends. Issue two picks up with him pinned, much like in that famous cover where Spider-Man's pinned with all kinds of shit on him and water dripping on him. It kind of looks like that. In this, he's like pinned with a lot burning wood all over him. And there is water there that's kind of keeping him alive, but he can't get out. And he doesn't know how he's going to survive, and he basically tells himself, I'm sorry, Dan, that I let you down. I was trying to be a hero, and I'm going to die. I'm going to burn to death. But he imagines to push some of the wood out and fall and pull himself out as the wood collapses on top of him. And it looks like there's a lot of weight on top of him, but he manages to get out and crash out of the building, and the firemen put him out. They put all the hoses on Blue Beetle and put him out. Even though his suit is kind of fireproof, he was on fire. The scientists find out that that is a Greek fire. That basically you can't put out a Greek fire. It'll just burn itself out. Like the myths say, what Greek fire will always burn. And you learn the origin of Fire Fist. Well, what essentially he was a researcher that died in a fire, and it shows him he was a scientist doing research on the field of pyrotechnics, and so he was messing with fire, and the firefighters come in to save him, but the building collapses and two firefighters are gonna die, but one of them grabs the other firefighter and pulls him out of the building. He doesn't pull this guy, Fire Fist, out, and that's why he's angry, is because they left him there to die. And that's why he's after all the firemen. And let's see what else happens here. That one guy is still Conrad Karpax actually finds the building where the other Cord, the evil Cord, was having all those evil robots. But then the scene cuts away from that as Ted Kord goes to his apartment building. He looks like he's well-to-do. He has a lot of money. And he shows up and he's attacked by a woman, and he actually flips her and starts to beat her up, and it's Melody. She was just like sneaking up on him, and they end up making love even though he's all stinky because he had just been in the fire, and he even mentions that he might smell like ash and stuff like that. But
Nasty.
they do the nasty. And then the detective is still doing his thing and investigating stuff, but they don't get really into that. And then there's that third character that was messing around with looking at the Prometheum. I think he's going to be the Madman. You know, the Madmen villains that have all those crazy, they look like clowns and have all the crazy color. I think that's what he's going to be, but he's like a janitor in the area. And he's like watching as they're going to ship the Prometheum from Star Labs to Cord Industries to do the research. And then you see that that secretary of his is stealing equipment, and you don't know who that's for. So that's yet another plot. The guy's a genius. He's got like four or five plot lines going on. And the armored truck carrying the Prometheum heads off to Cord Industries, and the tires are melted. And not Fire Fist, but somebody. It looks like this is a genius writer right here, Len Wein. You see a fourth, maybe a sixth plot line, as who's watching the Prometheum. It looks like Dr. Alchemy, which you should
Nice.
know from a Flash villain.
Yeah.
But he's there. It looks like with his stone, and it only shows one scene in the shadows, and you don't know who it is, but it sure looks like Alchemy. So that one guy that's the mischievous guy for the Prometheum is either Dr. Alchemy or he's the madman guy. His hair looks like the madman. But Melody tells him about the where this guy might exist, and they kind of find out who he is. And now he's going to target the Chicago Museum of Firefighting as they're going to open it and cut the ribbon. And Firefist shows up, and he's going to burn the whole museum up. And Blue Beetle gets into the third fight with Firefist, and Firefist actually they fight they're fighting to a standstill again, but Firefist crashes through the roof. They're fighting on the ceiling, and he falls in because of the burning flames, and they think he's dead as the whole museum burns down, and the fireman's like, "Man, they've really hit us bad." And now nobody will remember the Chicago Fire Department. And Blue Beetle says, "You save lives every day, and we'll always remember you. You won't be forgotten." And that's how it ends. But man, is it! I just love the shit out of that. It was awesome. And I can't say enough about Paris Collins. He drew the hell out of Blue Beetle. Like it the action scenes are amazing. This is just a really good book, and Len Wein is a master at throwing in so many plot lines. I think he threw in like seven of them, and they could lead to future, what happens in the next few issues.
Yeah,
So we don't know what's
nice.
going on with the secretary. We know someone's there to steal the Prometheum. We have the other archaeologist on the island, trying to find out what was going on there. We have the detective trying to find the murder for Dan Garrett. There's just so much going on. We potentially have Dr. Alchemy. It's amazing.
Nice. Yeah, actually, you make me want to pull those out because I just finished picking up a few that I was missing from that series. So I think it was 24 issues or
Yeah,
something.
it's not a lot, and
Yeah. So I have the whole thing now.
it's really, really
I
good.
should start reading those.
Good stuff. You got anything else?
Yeah, one last one I'll do quick. You brought the DC and I brought the Marvel this time. I'm still reading Silver Age Marvel, and I want to talk about Strange Tales 114, which came out, which has a cover date of November 1963. It's by Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and Dick Ayers did the inks.
Jack Kirby or Ditko?
No, it's Kirby.
Oh, wow.
Which you might, when I tell you what the story's about, you might see why. What I thought interesting was about this. So this came out around the time that Avengers, the most recent Avengers issue was number two, and you'll see why I mentioned that, because the story is called "The Human Torch Meets Captain America," and then there's a little star where they wrote, "Please don't reveal the surprise ending of this tale." So the story starts where Johnny Storm is training with Sue's help, and his buddies from the neighborhood come and interrupt his training session, and Sue's kind of annoyed at them. But they gotta talk to him because Captain America's alive and he's gonna make an appearance at the antique auto show in town, because that's the first thing he would do.
Well, he'd probably love that because he's a man from the past.
That's true, that's
Yeah,
true.
he's probably like, I'm gonna go look at these cars that remind me of when I used to be from,
All right, good point, good point. So his Johnny's buddy is like, "You should You should go as the Human Torch. Think about have two superheroes there. So Johnny goes, and before Captain America makes any appearance, some crooks show up at the auto show, and then Captain America shows up, but he doesn't really seem to want the Torch's help with the crooks. The Torch had melted some of the blacktop so that the car that the crooks are in can't get away, and Captain America says to him, "Beat it, you flaming freak. If I need any help, I'll ask for it." So later on, Johnny's drinking soda pops with his girlfriend Doris Evans, and he's not feeling too great about himself and meeting his hero and stuff, and he turned out to be a jerk, and Doris is not helping. She says, she's talking about Captain America, and she says, "He's my real idea of a man. Handsome, modest, strong. He's different. A girl could really go for him. He doesn't burst into flame at the drop of a hat." And right on cue, Johnny's getting pissed off. He bursts into flame, and his soda fizzes all over the place. So he runs to dump it in the sink, but he didn't flame off. And so he melts the his girlfriend's parents' linoleum in their kitchen floor. So he just gets the hell out of there. And it cracks me up because in the background, you see Doris is on the phone. She's saying, "Hello, hello, send some new linoleum over right away." Like there's just somebody you can call and they're just going to bring some linoleum over. So then we see Captain America. He lets the crooks from earlier out of jail. And they create a distraction to get the police out of town so Cap can rob a bank. But Johnny catches up to the crooks and he finds out about this plan. And you have like a few pages of a fight between Human Torch and this so-called Captain America. And at the end, he unmasks him and it turns out to be the Acrobat and a guy named Carl Zante, who he just faced a few issues earlier in Strange Tales 106. But I made note of the last three panels because it's really interesting given what we know happened. We see Johnny's back and he's feeling nostalgic about Captain America comics because of what has happened. So he says he's digging into his comics and says, "Here it is. One of the earliest Captain America mags. Boy, I sure dug this guy the most. I remember how he used to secretly change from Harvey Private Steve Rogers to the great Captain America. Wonder whatever did become of him. Is he still alive? Will he ever return? I'd sure like to know." And then the last little thing of the story on the caption below this panel. "You guessed it. This story was really a test to see if you too would like Captain America to return. As usual, your letters will give us the answer."
Nice.
So I thought that was real neat that they did that story before they actually did bring him back in Avengers number 4. So a little piece of history there.
Are you reading that on the Marvel Unlimited? Is that a two-part story though? Is it have like Human Torch and Doctor Strange or Human Torch and something else?
It depends. It was a two-part. There were two stories in the book, but they only it depends like on whether the second story they tend to only have it on there if it pertains to superheroes or like a popular character. Now, that said, they do have some earlier issues of Strange Tales and Tales of Suspense or Journey into Mystery and stuff that are like the pre-superhero stuff. But whenever they put like the Thor Journey into Mysteries and the Iron Man Tales of Suspense and the Human Torch, they do like if it's Human Torch and Doctor Strange, they'll do both, or if it's just one or the other, they'll just do like it's usually be like a 14 to 18 page story. So it depends, but in this case, it was just the one story. But then, like for a while, there was Journey. I read a whole bunch of Journey into Mystery Thor stories, and it would only be the first story. But then at a certain point, they started doing Asgard related backups,
Yeah.
and though when they started doing that, they've included those. Like I just read one where the backup was a tale about Odin and the fire guy, the fire demon,
Yeah.
and they included that. So
Cool.
yeah.
All
And
right.
that's it for me.
Do you want to wrap this one up?
Yeah, we're almost 3 hours,
This
so.
was episode 51. And you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com. And we are on the Facebook pages under Geek Brunch Podcast with spaces in between the words. And you can click the like button and follow us. And you can follow Chris. Puts his myth-making links there too for his Flash, Kid Flash story arcs. And then you've been doing some other stuff just randomly, it seems like. You did a
Yeah, a little
couple
bit
of them.
here and there. I've started to put a bit more time into the Kid Flash episodes. The last one I released and the one I'll be releasing tomorrow, episode 13, which will probably be out by the time you hear this. I did some more research and wrote more of a full script. And so I'm putting a bit more time. That's my first priority, so I'll kind of have to see how it goes to see if I have time to do it. Stuff outside of that, but
I
we'll
thought you
see.
just did something recently, though, that wasn't Kid Flash, like 2 or 3 links ago, or.
Yeah, let me see. The last couple, I did a episode of Mythmaking ETC Normal, which was Captain America issue.
That's the one I was thinking about.
Yeah.
All
Yep.
right, and at MythmakingETC is the Twitter for Chris, and I'm at Mike Myers Brunch, and Mike at comicbooknoise.com is my email, and Chris is MythmakingETC@gmail.com.
Yes, sir.
And leave an iTunes review if you get a choice, chance by going to iTunes if you use iTunes. And go into Geek Brunch and leave a written comment there if you can. And it helps give visibilities for the show and stuff like that. The more reviews and stuff like it's good visibility.
You
And I think
mealy
that's
mouth bastards.
it.
One thing that was I like on Star Trek when Scotty is in control because Spock and Kirk are both down on the planet,
Yeah.
and there was that one of those episodes I talked about earlier. He had this diplomat on the ship with him that was bothering him, and he was getting real pissed off. And he's like, he called him a mealy mouth bastard, and he's called him a popinjay, this popinjay fox.
He's getting pissed off. Huh?
Yeah, he was using some interesting terminology.
It's interesting that he was flying, the engineer was in charge.
Yeah, it's happened a couple times where he's third in line, I guess, if Spock and Kirk are both gone.
Engineering takes over.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks, and have a good one, Chris.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wasting no more time.